I, along with many others, have been warning that the ongoing riots were likely going to corrupt the criminal trial of Derek Chauvin. The defense attorney for Chauvin begged the judge to sequester the jury. The judge said no. Now, I am very impressed with this judge to now hear him say that Maxine Waters' threats against the jury may be cause to overturn the entire election. Look, man, I thought Judge Cahill was a fairly reasonable guy. I thought he was being fair, not just giving the defense what they wanted, but, you know, going back and forth, and I thought it made sense. But this has to be one of the stupidest things and one of the biggest blunders in judicial history, because we know the severity of the riots. We know it affected the entire country, and the defense kept saying, you need to sequester the jury. And the judge is like, no, no, it's fine. It's fine. And then Maxine Waters comes out, and she goes, if we don't get a first-degree murder conviction, which, as you know, Chauvin wasn't charged with, then we got to get more active and get in the streets and get more confrontational. More confrontational than burning down an Apple store or a police station and, you know, what we saw last year. And the judge now has the nerve to be like, you know what? Maybe on appeal, the entire trial will be overturned now. It's almost like it was on purpose. So we're going to talk about this. We got a bunch of stories surrounding what's going on with Maxine Waters' statements, how it's affecting politics. But we got a bunch of non-political stuff. We got, I want to talk about The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, because I've been watching that show and everyone thinks it's getting woke. And I think it's getting anti-woke, but we'll see what happens. So hanging out today, I guess just two members of the DC Riot Squad. Which one you fight over? Who goes first?
Mr. Richie McGinnis.
Oh, why, thank you. Thank you so much.
You got to talk into the microphone, Richie.
Richie McGinnis. Yep. The DC Riot Squad / Daily Caller Video Squad at Richie McGinnis and at Daily Caller with my boy Jorge over here.
Yeah, you know, field correspondent, Daily Caller, and yeah, you know, I guess we originated with the, you know, DC Riot Squad, so glad to be back and, you know, for an exciting week.
Both of you guys were on the ground during the riots.
Yep.
That's true.
Multiple cities.
Both of you guys have been on the ground for basically every single riot of the past year. Well, not literally everyone, because there's like multiple cities at the same time, but most of the big consequential ones, like notably Kenosha. And so what's important here, and I think it's going to be great, because not only were you guys in Minnesota, you guys were in Minnesota, right?
Just now, yeah.
Yep.
Not only is that relevant for all the news, but there was some legal analysts speculating that the riots are going to have a ramification on the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, because they're telling the jury, do what we want or we burn this place down. And so, you know, one legal analyst said, what do you think is going to happen when it comes to the jury in the Rittenhouse trial? They know what they're going to be there for. They're going to be like, no way, dude, am I getting involved in this? So we're going to talk all about that. We also got Ian. He's chilling.
Ian Crossland at Ian Crossland. Richard, Jorge.
Oh, good to see you, brother.
How do you feel about Ian? How do you feel about being called Richard? Is that your given name?
That's what my mom calls me when I'm in trouble. So
I knew it. When you're in trouble.
We're going, yeah.
How old are you?
Yeah. She still says it. Yeah. Like when I go to Minneapolis and I'm like, I'm in Minneapolis, Mom. Sorry, Mom.
There's a bunch of gunshots going off. Richard!
I told her day of when I went to Kenosha, dude. Hey, by the way, I'm in Wisconsin. And she said, all caps, don't be a hero.
Did she ask you to get like a big life insurance policy because you're taking... No, for real, like war conflict reporters usually get big life insurance policies because like, dude, come on. Like they're shooting each other out there.
Do you ever go just straight up rich?
Only
or Dick.
I'm hoping to be rich in name.
I like where your head's at.
Because of Dogecoin.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we're not gonna go there.
Don't get me started.
Tomorrow's the day of Doge.
All right. We got Lydia. She's pressing all the buttons.
I'm in the corner. I am the least interesting person on this podcast tonight. It's gonna be a great night. I'm looking forward to what's going on in Minneapolis. Thanks, guys.
Everybody, before we get started, go to timcast.com and become a member. And guess what? We put up the first episode of the blog after like 8 months of talking about it, and you know, we're just going to start it off. We're going to figure it out as we go, but we have to just start doing it. Otherwise, it never gets done. So we got this episode up. We got this pro bike guy, Mike Feedy. He did a grind on the grind bar. It was fantastic. Go to timcast.com. You'll see all the stuff. But become a member because we have this massive library of members-only exclusive content. And tonight, after this show, there will be an exclusive members-only segment again for all of you who sign up. And don't forget to like, share, subscribe, hit that notification bell. And I also want to announce real quick, I believe today... Maybe tomorrow will be the last day you can get your tinfoil gorilla t-shirt. I let it go a little bit longer because people were mentioning that payday comes, you know, like once every other week for a lot of people, and they didn't have a chance to get paid and they want to buy the shirt. So you'll notice if you go to timcast.com, click store, there is an I'm a gorilla shirt. He's wearing a tinfoil hat. We'll keep that up for maybe another day or so. But again, a lot of people have mentioned, like, you know, bi-weekly, like, you know, every, like a paycheck every other week. So we might keep it up at least for a few more days, but it's going to be going away very soon because it was meant to just be a limited edition thing. It's already been up for a long time. So, that, there you go. Again, like, whatever. Oh, and if you're listening on iTunes and Spotify, leave us a good review because give us 5 stars because it helps us out. All right. Okay. Let's get to the news. We got the story from dailymail.co.uk. Maxine Waters may have handed defense grounds for appeal and the turning over of this trial. Derek Chauvin trial judge blasts abhorrent Democrat for calling for riots if no conviction. They say Derek Chauvin's defense attorney Eric Nelson called for a mistrial after the jury retired on Monday. He cited Rep. Maxine Waters' comments on the case as he argued that there was no way the jury could be unbiased given constant media coverage. He's right. Now that we have U.S. representatives threatening acts of violence in retaliation to this trial, it's frankly mind-blowing, Nelson said. Judge Peter Cahill replied, I grant you Congresswoman Waters may have handed you grounds for appeal and the turning over of this trial. But Cahill refused to grant a mistrial and adjourned the court until the jury comes back with a verdict. It wasn't just that. The defense argued prosecutorial misconduct because in rebuttal, the prosecution said that I guess they were like making they were telling stories and it was nonsense and repeatedly kept saying that it was essentially fabrication of facts, which you're not allowed to do. In court, the prosecution's supposed to say that, you know, our expert testified to this and we hold this to be correct. You can't say the other person's making up crap and they're lying and telling stories. And so when the defense said, you know, objection, the judge said overruled. Don't say stories again, but, you know, he's allowed to say stories. Then when the prosecution kept berating the defense and insulting them, the judge finally stepped in and was like, okay, you got to stop doing that. This is what bugs me. We just saw, how long were the riots going on this, so far in Minneapolis?
You guys? Well, they've been since, well, the recent ones since last Sunday, the death of Dante Wright.
So about 8 days, yeah. A week. Nelson immediately, the defense for Chauvin, asked the judge to sequester the jury. And he said, so they don't watch the news. They don't see what's going on. And the judge said, well, I'll instruct the jury not to watch the news. And the defense argued, everyone knows about what's going on. Everyone's talking about it. And he was saying that even TV shows, fictional TV shows on Thursday night, NBC or whatever, are referencing the trial and making statements about what they want to occur. And so he's like, you need to sequester them. The judge initially said no. Then after the riots started with Dante Wright, then he was like, judge, I'd like to ask you again to sequester the jury. And the judge is like, I don't think we need to do that. And now the judge is like, well, the trial may be completely overturned. That's incompetence.
What does that mean, overturned? Is that a mistrial?
So it means there'll be a verdict. Then the defense is, let's say the jurors come back and say guilty on all counts. I mean, let's say the jury comes back and says acquitted on all counts but manslaughter. Mm. No matter what happens now, the defense can file an appeal to a higher court saying, Rep. Maxine Waters, Democrat, came from California to our state and said, unless we get a conviction for premeditated murder, which they didn't charge Chauvin with, we're going to get more confrontational. They've already been rioting. What does more confrontational mean? Yamiche, is that her name?
Yamiche Elsendore?
Yeah, Yamiche Elsendore said, the right is claiming that Rep. Maxine Waters called for violence because she said, get more active and more confrontational. That's not a call for violence. And I'm like, confrontational, what does that mean? Like, confronting somebody? If you're already burning down their buildings and throwing bricks at cops, what is more confrontational than that? Now the judge is admitting, yep, there it is. The jury of course knows. They've been threatened, and they're going to burn the city down no matter what. Because she said first-degree murder, and they don't have that.
Yeah, they don't. And I thought at minimum they would at least sequester before the weekend started. They didn't even do that, and that's obviously when Maxine Waters came in. I mean, I think just being on the ground, one of our reporters, Lisa Benetton, she did a great video where she asked folks, hey, you know, what happens if you don't get, you know, if you guys don't get murdered? And people literally say, and that are from Brooklyn, so they said, we're burning it down. We're burning it down.
Everybody.
And they don't need, I would say, you know, with Maxine Waters' comments, it's like just you're just giving these people more power to just say, hey, if we do this, we're good to go. And I think a lot of those folks are going to point to last summer and say, hey, if we go out and, you know, do our thing, it's okay because Kamala Harris was there to bail us out just like last year.
Yep.
And I think that's something that we have to keep in the back of our mind.
I think all the cops should resign. I think every single cop in the Minneapolis area should just resign right now. Just get out of there. Just leave.
Oh, that's tough.
They voted for it.
That they did. And I know right now the big difference right now is compared to last year is, you know, being on the ground is, I guess, Minnesota with the law enforcement, they didn't have a communication system between, you know, the Minnesota State Troopers, National Guard, and then local police. So coming this year around, being on the ground reporting, we learned that now Minnesota has created a program called Operation Safety Net. So now we have the National Guard, local police, and state troopers now working all basically now hand in hand to control these groups. I will say this. I think, you know, Rich, you know, being on the ground again in Brooklyn Center, they did a great job of protecting the police department. You know, they put the barricades. They had the law enforcement there. But one thing that we have to remember, and I try to tell these folks all the time, is when you have so much law enforcement, you know, concentrated on just one area, it leaves the rest of the city stretched thin. I mean, just I said this last this was reported yesterday, but numbers might even be higher. But since last Sunday of Dante Wright's death, the police department in Brooklyn Center, which is a little small town area, they have already received over 200 calls of either businesses damaged, looted, or burglaries. And that's one thing that we have to remember is when you have so much protection at the police center, the rest of the city
that whole shopping mall is literally right next to the police station. Like that whole shopping mall that was looted on the first couple of nights, it's like 100 yards from the whole police station.
This is why I'm saying the cops should resign. Or at the very least, you know, we had, I think it was Tom Rogan, he mentioned, they should give notice that in 30 days they'll all resign.
That'd be interesting. I've been speaking to some inside sources inside the Portland PD from last summer, and when I was speaking to a police officer, she said the morale is low. She says, we have people transferring, you know, just literally.
You don't say.
Retiring early. And, I mean, I would expect that we see the same thing here, and I know that we were speaking about this before the show, Tim, but the Minnesota Senate just approved $9 million to get out of state law enforcement to help out, you know, with this upcoming week. So, you know, pray for these guys because, they take a lot of beating when they're out there.
There are I've heard from a lot of people in the comments. They're like, Tim, these cops who are staying are doing it because they know there are good people who need to be protected. You know, the way I described it was your house is on fire. We repeatedly tried we tried fighting the fire last year, but a bunch of people in the House voted for the arsonists. Kamala Harris, who's bailing these people out, soliciting funds. Joe Biden, whose staff is funding the bailouts. And I'm like, so at that point, it made sense to be like, stay and fight figuratively, have, you know, show people what this means and then vote for somebody who will defend you. And they went Democrat. They voted for the people who are defending the rioters, not the cops. So now you got a problem. Now your house is burning down. And the people you think you're helping are screaming at you to get out while the house burns down around them. So I understand the analogy where it's like, we got to help the people here who are good. And I'm like, I get that. But at a certain point, don't you say, like the people, like imagine a firefighter goes into a burning house and he's like, I'm going to get you out of here, ma'am. And then she like just grabs on and squeezes a flaming beam as tight as she can. It's like, no, I'm staying. The firefighter's got to get out before he gets, you know, engulfed in the flames. Look, the people who are there who are good people, what are they doing to defend these cops? Do we see press conferences held by community leaders and activists and neighborhood watches saying we support our cops and we need them here to protect us? No. But what do we see? We see endless riots in support of shutting down and abolishing the police. So at a certain point, the police need to send a message. If you're not getting the support, nobody wants you there. They voted for the people who hate you. Then you need to say, okay, then I'll pass it off to you and then see what happens.
You know, the metaphor I'm thinking of is that 10 guilty people go free before one innocent person suffers. And I think that these people that aren't speaking up are the innocent bystanders that I don't want them to suffer.
That's a different analogy. Well, it doesn't work.
I'm not sure if you guys seen the news too, is one of the city council members from Brooklyn Center came out and said, hey, you know, I get the emotions at heart, but we should wait for due process. Got fired.
So that was the city manager.
Yep.
And then a councilwoman for Brooklyn Center admitted she voted to have him fired because she was scared they would come after her. All right. Personal responsibility takes precedent at a certain point. If you would fire a city manager who called for due process because, you know, this cop shot this guy and then publicly say, I'm scared they'll attack me. Okay. You need to either stand up for what you believe in or don't come to me for help when you vote to support these lunatics. But look, at a certain point, you got to throw water on the fire too.
But what I think it is, Tim, from being on the ground, because, and I think Richie could attest to this, is we spoke to a lot of residents who don't support, obviously, the constant clashes in their neighborhood, the destruction. The only thing is they're actually afraid just to even go on camera with us in an interview because they feel like, hey, if I go on camera with you, they'll literally destroy my stuff tomorrow.
Well, if your house...
I think there is a lot of community people that do want to stand up. They want to speak out. I think they're just super afraid of the retaliation.
Exactly.
Because if they feel like the media, the culture, everyone is against them.
Since Trump left, I mean, very much like during, you know, the last year, a lot of the riots have been like us versus the federal government. a la Donald Trump. No Trump, no KKK, no racist USA. But now that Biden's president, it's the system itself. And so you're right. Like the protesters on the ground, I think the ideology has shifted even further left, because basically now it's like, okay, now you really adopt our plan or else you're a fascist as well. So Biden's a fascist if you know, he doesn't abolish the police effectively.
Look, I get messages from people all the time where they're like, I got my family out of Minnesota last week, or I'm moving next month, or I'm trying to move out now. I get messages from people who say I moved out 6 months ago. I've got messages from people where they were like, man, Tim, I'm glad you said to get out of the city because I got out before the latest riot started and I lived real close. So listen, I hear what you're saying about people scared to go on camera. The founding fathers, many of them who signed the Declaration of Independence, were killed, had their homes burned down, their families were killed. They risked everything to stand up for what they believed in. At a certain point, you don't get to be a pampered golden age American who can sit in your home and just kick your feet back and say, I'll keep my head down and be fine. Mm-hmm. Because it is expanding, it is getting worse. There are a lot of pundits saying they think the riots after the Chauvin trial are going to be worse than we saw last year. It's one thing to see the anger over the death of George Floyd. It's another thing to see the state say he didn't do anything wrong, depending on what the result may be. So Maxine Waters wants a charge that didn't actually happen. First degree murder, premeditation. So based on her own logic, riots are coming. If at this point the people are unwilling to stand up and defend themselves, okay, well, do you expect the people who are speaking up, not even from your area, who are speaking out and risking their careers, who are getting canceled, losing their jobs for defending, you know, the what's true and what's correct, you expect them to come to your aid when you won't do it yourself? There's that famous line about a leader who says, I would never instruct one of my men to do something I wouldn't do myself, or one of my, you know, men or women. Yet here you have people who won't stand up for themselves asking you to do it for them. And so there are cops who are like, I will. I'm like, nah, at a certain point, if you're a cop and they're all turning their back on you, refusing to stand up and even say the words, I support you, then you don't have support from them. No matter what they think, no matter what they're telling people, they're lying. Somebody who truly supported you would stand up, hold a press conference. We support the police and we reject this. They won't do it. Why? Because they're scared of the extremists and they aren't willing to fight back in a figurative sense, in any capacity. So at a certain point, the cops got to be like, then you're on your own. Because what happens? Kim Potter, a 26-year veteran, there's a guy wanted for aggravated robbery, Dante Wright. He's resisting arrest. He's wanted on a gun charge, so they know he's likely armed. I believe he had a .45 Ruger. Jumps into his car, and she doesn't know what's going on, and she draws her weapon. Presumably, the story is she thought it was her taser. She shoots him. This is a tragedy, but when you have a guy wanted for an aggravated robbery, that's like robbing someone with a deadly weapon, and then he jumps in his car, you're like, okay, he's resisted, and it's active aggression. Should she then defend herself or defend others? Well, she said she made a mistake. For that, the prosecutor comes out. He came out during the riots, I guess, and said, we are going to do everything in our power to see her held accountable through this system. Okay, she deserves it. She absolutely deserves whatever the system throws at her, because all of these cops have been watching what the feckless, pathetic, spineless people of their community have been doing, selling them out, sacrificing them to the mob, and they thought they'd be safe. They thought the mob would ignore them. They thought they could stand there as a part of the system propping up injustice and they would be safe. Nah, not anymore. You helped prop up a bunch of arsonists burning down your community, and now you're mad that you're caught in the fire? I can't run into a burning building you chose to be in.
I don't like this metaphor, because the people of the United States are sucking off the teat of the Federal Reserve, bankrupting the world, and we don't deserve to die and be burning hell for it.
This is
You're punishing people for something that they're not necessarily responsible for or we're ignorant of.
The Federal Reserve has nothing to do with this.
It's the people of the United States are spearheading the global catastrophe financially.
Okay, Ian, you gotta get back on subject.
You're talking about the people of the city being responsible because they're not saying anything.
No, because they voted for Kamala Harris.
Some of them, but not all of them.
The majority of the state voted for the people who support the riots, and they stay there, but they won't speak out.
There's a huge number of people that didn't, and they don't deserve to
be
punished.
Are they bailing
violence?
Water?
Well,
is that the,
No. Are they bailing
the
water?
Reason, I think the reason they're not is because they're not organized, and if one of them sticks their head up, it is going to get cut off.
They won't even say the words?
I don't know, man.
They won't speak up to save their own lives? Then you get no sympathy from me. You have the option to simply stand up and say, hello, good journalist Jorge. I wish the police had more support. They won't even do that. They're scared. Well, I'm sorry, man. Life is not always candy canes and rainbows. And when violent terrorists come to burn down your neighborhood, you at least have to say, please stop. At the bare minimum, say, officer, please help us. They won't even do that. So if you've got terrorists burning down your city and you don't have the ability to at least say help, sorry.
Yeah, but like Jorge was saying, if they get on camera and they say help, their business is going to get destroyed the next
day. All that is required for evil to succeed is that good people do nothing.
Yeah, but or good people put themselves out there vulnerably. That also helps evil succeed.
You think, how does that make sense?
Because they get killed easy.
People need to stand up and at least do something instead of nothing. You're saying
they got to organize.
They might risk themselves. Well, it starts by speaking.
Well, but not randomly and incoherently.
Who said anything about random and incoherent?
Not like one random person to get up and be like, I'm going to be the guy that makes a stand and gets my birth. If they formed underground like the founding fathers did.
Dude,
you brought the founding fathers as a metaphor.
Your argument is absurd.
No, they organized. They weren't just like
taxpayers who fund the police.
The founding fathers didn't get up and say, King George, I hereby declare you're an idiot, because they would have been executed on the spot. They had to organize underground.
For maybe a certain period, but they literally had constitutional conventions in their states and sent delegates.
Yeah.
And they voted on these things.
Right, but it was all underground.
These people are paying for the police, they're paying for the government, they're paying the politicians and voting for them. And I'll tell you this, the people who voted for it, why would I argue they don't want it? If somebody was in Minneapolis and said, I want Joe Biden, whose staff members support the riots, and I want Kamala Harris, who supports the rioters, and then the rioters come to burn down their house, I can only assume they're going, yes, I voted for this. I'm happy it's happening. Why would you assume they made that mistake? I don't know what was in their mind. It's like that guy in Los Angeles when the riots were in downtown LA or whatever, and he was cheering, this is awesome, yeah, burn it down. And then when they came within a block of his house, he goes, no, stop, don't come to my house.
Do you think it's that, or do you think people were misled by the portrayal of what has been going on for the past year?
Perhaps the media is,
if they knew, you know, the full extent of what has been happening.
Personal responsibility. Too many Americans for too long have been fat and lazy, figuratively and literally, sitting around, not paying attention, thinking everything would be done for them. And I'll put it this way, firefighters risking their lives because the DAs won't prosecute these people. You want to get mad at cops? Okay, why should a firefighter risk his life running into literal burning buildings that are collapsing? Because when the police make arrests, the DA cuts them loose. You want to support your community? You need to speak up and do it. But if people are sitting back saying, someone will do it for me, eventually your house falls down because you're not maintaining it. I cannot. You guys cannot. And the police cannot be the people who are begging, just carry your own weight, dude, for once. They won't do it. They won't. So they vote for it. And I'll tell you this, ignorance is no excuse for supporting tyranny. I understand the media manipulates. I hate them for it. I understand that these extremists are terrorizing them and threatening them. But if you don't stand up and just at least try, and no one does, tyranny wins.
This is why I brought up the Federal Reserve and the U.S. people. Ignorance is no excuse for supporting tyranny. We live in the empire. So being ignorant of that is not an excuse to support that.
That's correct.
That's my point.
You're right.
But I don't want to punish and destroy everyone.
You mean you wouldn't join Antifa is what you're saying?
Well, I have this stupid sympathy for those ignorant people. I don't want to see them suffer.
No one does.
But well, you're making the argument that you want the police to leave so that... I'm sorry, Richie, what?
What breeds that ignorance? Like, why aren't people
laziness,
aware of that? We live in a
media
in a free
manipulation
society with the internet.
Wealth. We for too long have been people in good times breeding weak individuals, weak citizens who don't care about civic duty or responsibility. Yeah. And I'm not talking about some nationalistic whatever. I'm talking about literally being like going and giving your firefighters some brownies and being like, thank you for everything you do. Or going to your cops and talking to them about issues you're concerned about, you've heard about in the media. They don't even do that. They don't even do that. It's just media manipulation, political sectarianism, and a bunch of lazy, disinterested people who are like, I'm keeping my head down because I got it good. Okay, listen. There was a period in our country, in our nation's history, where death was like, you died. You know what I mean? Looking at these stories from back in like the old pioneer days in the Wild West, people understood risk and responsibility. And they had to wake up at 6 in the morning and farm and go to bed at 11 at night. And it was work, work, work all day, every day. Now we have all of the comforts of the first world. We have fast food, McDonald's. We have too much food. Americans are gaining weight like crazy and they're doing less work. And now you have a whole section of a sect of people who are leftists who think they shouldn't have to do work at all. We are just becoming, as a country, we reject responsibility for our own lives and our own selves, and we say the police will do it. And then when the police can't do it and they're overrun, well, I'm not going to speak up. Someone else has to do it. Okay, well then, listen, man, if a fire is raging towards your home and you're like, I'm not going to put out a firefight, I'll get here. Okay, well, eventually your house burns down. That's not me saying I want your house to burn. I don't want your house to burn down. But it's also me saying I don't want my firefighters to die because you refuse to start turn your hose on. At the very least, you could have done that, right? And wet your house down. Now your house is a raging five-alarm fire, and the firefighters are the ones going to die because of you? That's why I'm saying the police need to back out before things – before – look, I'll tell you what's going to happen. The cops stick around. We get a Kim Potter situation. If the cops right off the bat said, we won't stand for this, well, then Kim Potter wouldn't have been there to create another circumstance that they use to light the country on fire. I'm not saying I know what the solution is, but I can tell you this. It's a Chinese finger trap, and the cops keep pulling, and you're not going to get out of it if you keep doing this. The people around you won't support you, so something needs to change, and it needs to change now so people realize what's happening.
Even when the cops are there, I mean, Kenosha, there were no firefighters and no cops, like, in a situation where they were actually needed, like a shooting or a fire. You know, we saw they were basically focused, like Jorge was saying earlier, entirely on the riots. And so, like, over the last year, if you look at all of the criminal data across the country, I mean, that's effectively what's been happening is the police are paying attention to the civil unrest and not paying attention to the violent crimes that actually really impact the communities.
Yeah.
Well, one thing, too, that is interesting that I think we'll start to figure out in these couple months is how each city, major city, deals with the potential civil unrest. And the communication they've used. In Los Angeles, the Los Angeles County Sheriff, Alex Villanueva, he came out aggressive and said, hey, we got National Guard on standby. We got all this and stuff. We are not playing around compared to last year. And according to some sources on the ground, I mean, LAPD, so far as I know this past week, has been handling the demonstrations pretty well. And I think Los Angeles, I mean, I don't know about every city, but I know Los Angeles has, they for sure are going to fix the mistakes they made last year because their county sheriff is a little bit aggressive. But I do definitely see what Tim is saying. They need the police officers or law enforcement. They need some type of support. It needs to come from somewhere. In Portland, I speak to a lot of the officers. They feel like their work is useless because they'll make the arrest, they'll do all this stuff, but then the district attorney will say, off the hook, off the hook, off the hook, and that's going to bring morale down. And I think in Los Angeles, what we're seeing is an LA County sheriff say, hey, we're taking the aggressive lane. We're ready to go. We have National Guard on standby. And I know the DA down there, George Cascone, is not a guy they like. He's super progressive. But even the LA County sheriff is saying, we don't even care what the DA is doing. We're going bullhead, you know, all forces in. And so far, LA hasn't seen that violence that we've seen in other cities.
What's the internet's definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome?
That's Einstein, yeah.
Was it Einstein? I think it was a meme. So you got these cops in Portland who are like, I'm going to arrest this guy for breaking the law. And then they bring him to the station, and the DA goes, you're free to go. And they go, hey, I know. I'll arrest him tomorrow for breaking the law. And the DA goes, you're free to go. The woman who was accused of setting fire to the police union building, she was arrested last year on some serious charges, and they just cut her loose and dropped the charges. Then she comes back not even a year later and burns down the police union building, and then they release her without bail. So at a certain point, man, I don't know what these cops think they're doing. It's like there's this meme video where a guy.
What else can they do though?
Leave,
you know.
Leave.
They got bills to pay. You know, that's not realistic for somebody who.
If
literally,
your house is burning down, will you be like, I can't leave. I'm homeless. I'll be homeless.
It's like my house is burning down, but my family's going to starve if we don't stay.
So you stay in a house that's literally on fire. You're
still getting a paycheck. Look, you know, as long as you're alive, as long as you're breathing.
What you just said is very interesting. What you've said is it's actually safer and easier for the police to be in the violent riots in a system that's broken and not working than it is to actually leave and go somewhere that would be more
because what is a cop's future employment in this current climate right now? I just left the Portland PD. You want to hire me to be an NBC correspondent?
No. Think about that. That means while Minneapolis burns down, it is actually safer and more secure for an officer to be an ineffective and villainized individual working for the department than it is for them to move their family to any other city for any other job.
Yeah, I put it this way right now.
If a small portion of my garage caught on fire, I wouldn't expect everyone to run screaming from the building. I'd expect someone to go with a fire extinguisher and just put a little fire out. If the fire eventually engulfed half the building, then the safety is, okay, at this point, you stay in the building, you're probably going to die. You need to get out.
Yeah.
The fire right now isn't big enough to where the cops feel threatened.
And I think basically the fire here, you know, the responsibility of the Fourth Estate is literally to call out when there's a fire when nobody else is willing to. Like the government, you know, obviously isn't.
Fourth Estate, you say?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean.
You guys,
basically.
Not the mainstream media.
Well, I think we have the internet now. And I do think when we started out covering the riots at the beginning of the year, we were saying the term protesters, not calling them rioters necessarily.
Let me pause real quick. I'll pull this story up as a good launching point.
Yeah, for sure.
We got the story from Willamette Week. Marchers set fire to an Apple store and shatter windows across downtown Portland after police killing. The scale of damage tonight recalled the riots last May. Here's what I love about this article.
Yeah.
They say it's a riot last May, but right now they are marchers.
Yeah.
The media is absolutely shielding these people, but you're making a point.
Well, I think I was trying to make the point kind of from the other side, which is it's just as bad to then come out there and label every single person who's out there in a situation where, you know, police start banging up against the front line of protesters. They declare unlawful assembly. Some of those people were out there with good intentions. So if you say BLM terrorists in every single tweet, then basically you're throwing yourself into that trench, the other trench. Yep. And so you need people in the middle who are just trying their best to look at both and say, like, okay, so we use the term protester because it's like same as the Capitol riot. There were certain people there who were caught up in the madness, the Lord of the Flies effects of the chaos. You start getting pepper sprayed. It's pretty hard to make logical decisions. They didn't like, so using that neutral terminology wasn't good in the short term. I was like, Jorge, you're not going to get as many retweets. But in the long term, people started to pay attention because they're like, oh, these guys are actually here and they're actually trying their best to actually just show fly on the wall what's going on.
How many people are actively, have you heard actively call for the cops to resign or leave?
I mean, that's a good point though.
Probably only me, right?
Yeah.
Because my position is, I understand not everyone out there is a violent terrorist. But there are many violent terrorists. I understand a lot of people go out there and they're peaceful protesters. The problem with the leftist activists is that they espouse a support for what's called diversity of tactics. Have you heard this phrase from Antifa?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Diversity of tactics basically means that if you're a peaceful protester, you are supposed to defend or at the very least tolerate violent extremists who are burning things down and attacking police. Respect the diversity of tactics. It's an excuse. They have systems where they need bodies.
You're right. They exploit that. That's for sure.
So there are regular peaceful protesters who go out there knowing this and then say, but I had good intentions, even though I dressed in all black to shield the extremists. Now, what they say about the police is if you have, what do they say? If you have 1,300 good cops and 12 of them are bad, then, and the 1,300 good cops won't call out the 12 bad cops, then you have 1,312 bad cops. I think it's right. 1312 ACAB. And so the point the left is making is the same. The cops who refuse to speak out and stop the bad cops are just as bad. So I look at that and I'm like, there's no legit solution between two warring ideologies convincing the side is evil. But there is one simple solution. If the people of these neighborhoods won't defend the police, that means the police don't have their support. And if the people and the other people in these communities, be it maybe a smaller percentage, are actively voting against the police, then the police have a very simple answer. Instead of arguing about who's evil and who's not, you leave. You don't got to worry about support. You don't got to worry about the violence. And you don't got to worry about they asked for it. They get it. And everyone's better off.
So my only point is you're a commentator, right? So your call for the police to do this or that, that's legitimate. Our role here is to be on the ground and to say what we're seeing.
Right.
And so when you have the entire media whose responsibility is to be on the ground and say what they're seeing, and they're either trying to portray this in this light or this in that light. I got my ass beat by cops in Wauwatosa with a billy club, and I showed the frickin' bruise on my knee. And everyone's like, oh, the bootlicker, finally. It's like, no. How many times have I shown, the BLM snack van getting the window smashed in D.C. by this white shirt cop who just decided to smash a freaking window. We're not like choosing, oh no, the cops are good, so we're not going to post that one. It's like, but that's the way that this should have been covered from the start. And the reason why we're in this situation now is because nobody was paying attention to us because it was two different echo chambers. And after time, maybe some people are, but still, it's very much two different trenches right now.
I should qualify my previous statement. When I said calling for police to resign, obviously the left is doing nothing but that.
Yeah.
My reasoning is very, very different.
Yeah.
Because they're being sacrificed and disrespected, and the people in the community won't do anything to stand up for themselves. So, clarification.
Yeah, understood.
But so you get that's why I pulled up the Willamette Week thing. Marchers set fire to an Apple store. They torched that place. It was gutted. And they're not marchers. They're, you know what? I think calling the people who did that rioters is being generous.
Yeah.
Because their political motivations.
You think anarchists then?
No, a terrorist.
Austere marchers.
Well,
austere local activists.
Well, while me and Rich were on the ground in Brooklyn Center, I caught a few interesting kind of moments on video where you will find black locals from Brooklyn Center yelling at white, you could call them protesters or agitators, and tell them, we don't want violence in our neighborhoods. We don't condone this. And they, and them telling them, hey, when that 10 p.m. curfew hits, we all want to go home. Because I think one thing that maybe a lot of folks don't know, unless you're on the ground, and I try to put it out much as out there as I can, is what makes this situation for Brooklyn Center Police Department difficult to control this crowd is because right across the street, you have all these apartment complexes. So you have kids in these buildings. So that's one thing that we try to put out there is that a lot of the black locals in Brooklyn Center literally came out and were telling the white protesters, hey, don't be burning down our city. Don't be doing this to our mm-hmm. neighborhoods. We literally have kids here. We have to be here till tomorrow. So I think that was an interesting thing that I was kind of able to capture. We wanted to put it out there.
What were the guys' name? They had the vests.
They were Minnesota Freedom Fighters.
And it was pretty funny to see the Minnesota Freedom Fighters, predominantly black, all go up to the Antifa umbrella gang, which I've been referring to as the umbrella gang because, you know, they're basically like rolling around with their umbrellas completely in formation the whole time. They're bringing like wooden barriers up to the fence and stuff. And the guys are like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, we're out here to protest. It's not to like smash with police. Like, we're trying to get our voice out here. What is your goal? You know,
and then one thing too, Tim, is then the white protesters, the Antifa, will then basically claim that the black Minnesota Freedom Fighters are working with the police and they're getting paid under the table. So it was interesting to just hear that go down in person.
It's because you look at the data, peaceful protests work. It generates press coverage, which generates sympathy and then makes political change. It works. Mm-hmm. And violent riots do the opposite, like we saw with the civics poll. After George Floyd's death, net support for Black Lives Matter reached like 27%. Yeah. And then after the riots, it dropped lower than it had been the year mm-hmm. before. Because people don't like riots.
I wish people would realize that the best place to peacefully protest is on the internet, on video. In the 60s, it was you got a huge crowd so that hopefully you get some media attention. So people will come with a camera and put you on TV, on ABC News. You don't need that anymore. Now you make a YouTube video with 70,000 views, you change 20,000 minds, and then political change happens.
Well, and, I think a good example, though, is Twitter. Yeah. Activists took over Twitter and use it to ban people and destroy the careers of those they oppose. It works.
Peacefully protesting.
Just from my outsider perspective, I mean, it could have been even more powerful, like, let's say when this George Floyd thing happened, for them to say, hey, you know what? Let's get a million-man march in Washington, D.C. We're going to go up, and we're going to demand these bills, and we're going to do it peacefully. And, you know, I think that would have been more powerful instead of the riots, because when the riots happened, and then, you know, me and Rich have been on the ground, one thing that we try to do at the Daily Caller, and I think, you know, not much folks did, is after the riots, we would at least spend a couple of days like actually talking to the business owners, and a lot of them say, hey, we supported this movement from like day one, and now we just don't understand why. And you just turn off a lot of America when you go that pro. I mean, like I said, I think from an outside perspective, probably would have been more powerful to say, hey, let's get a million people, let's show up in Washington, D.C., let's march peacefully, and you know, let's demand a set of bills. And I think right now, too, with Black Lives Matter, Antifa, whoever you want to categorize these groups, is they don't have a list of demands that's like a legit, like, hey, we're going off this. Because, you know, when you speak to one person, once a person says abolish the whole system, then some people say, oh, well, we want some police, we want community police. It's a mixed message.
I don't believe the businesses, to be honest. When you guys have been to Berkeley, I'd imagine, right?
Not yet.
So in, nope. you go to Oakland, you go to Berkeley, you go to the Bay Area, and all the businesses have these pro leftist signs in their windows. One of them actually said, I remember it was a Burger King, and it said, this is a family-owned, you know, franchise. Please do not destroy our windows. See, that they had to say it outright because it was a Burger King. You know, the local brewery just puts whatever leftist trash in their window, hoping that it spares them. So when you get a journalist who comes out, because I've talked to people on the record, off the record, I'll tell you this, on the record, they're like, we're big supporters of the movement. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, we're hoping that they don't destroy our business. You turn the camera off and they're like, I can't stand any of this. What are they doing? I hate it. Mm-hmm. But they want to say it publicly because they're trying to beg. They're begging extremists. And I'll tell you what happens. This is the product of apathy in politics. The district attorneys who get elected are funded by leftist progressives who will not prosecute their own. So the cops arrest them and they get cut loose, and then they set fire to the police union building. Then local businesses are forced to just bend the knee because they have no justice system left to defend them.
At what point is it a crime for a DA to release a criminal?
I don't think
it is.
I mean,
like in Los Angeles right now, they just elected George Cascone, and he's been one of the more progressive DAs. And like I was saying, the LA County Sheriff and him are just butting heads on everything. I've actually spoken to a few police officers and LAPD on the record and off the record who tell me, like, hey, some of the people that we arrest, we charge them for rape within like a couple days out on the street, and they'll like commit a murder. So that's, it's just, you know, I mean, at one point too, you have to ask, is like, you know, at one point, is it a crime? Because it's like, you're putting your own community in danger, and the people that you say that you're protecting, which is always black and brown. We want to protect the black and brown communities. That's who you're actually impacting the most when you do this, is the black and brown communities.
It's like,
these criminals are not getting released in Beverly Hills. I'll tell you that.
No, if they get arrested in Beverly Hills, they'll get shipped somewhere else. But you know who seems to have learned to give up because of politics? These DAs. They're like, whatever, man. Nobody actually cares about the community anymore, so I'll tell them what they want to hear and then just do nothing. And then all the chaos happens, like the cops haven't learned yet. They're like, I'm going to keep doing the same thing over and over again, even though nothing's getting resolved. But I guess, hey, when you're getting a paycheck and you got a house and you got a mortgage payment, I suppose from my perspective, you know, I said this 2-3 years ago, the escalation. I said this, I think, 2 years ago, that we were going to see heavily racialized riots or riots for racial reasons escalate because of a lot of the critical race theory stuff.
And Tim, I wanted to bring this up too, because I know when we talk about this stuff, it's, you know, riots and all that stuff. But I think one thing too, we maybe need to look at as a society, and I think maybe the Adam Toledo was not a great example, but something that maybe we could look at as America is, you know, what about the family structure? You know, I think one thing that we're not talking about is a lot of these people who are causing the riots or out there, you know, taking advantage of any civil unrest. What type of family were they raised? Did they have both parents at home? And I think that's another discussion that America needs to start having. You know, I know with the Adam Toledo.
But hold on. To address that point, you realize a lot of these Black Lives Matter people are white progressives from middle class families or upper middle class families. I think there was
But just because they're from upper middle class family doesn't mean their dad was in a shitbag.
But their dad could be a lazy middle class intellectual. Is that the right?
Yeah.
He could be a Mommy's huge Wall Street guy. So could be a huge Wall Street guy who made them millions of dollars, you know, and he's rich as heck, but his daddy was never there, and he's so mad about it.
Is a good point, but I want to make sure we're clarifying that it's not necessarily about whether you got mom or dad. It's about, are your parents lazy and apathetic? You could have two parents, and they can just be...
Like, they won't smack you around when you're
addicted to antidepressants. I mean, like, they send you to school, and then when you're begging for help and attention, they put you on drugs.
Yeah.
And then you grow up messed up because you never had any real leadership in your family.
I think we're saying the same thing.
Or is he a drunk?
Yeah. Which is I'm not, but you like smack him around. I'm like, no.
No, you know, just, come on. I mean, I turned out just fine, right? Come on.
I imagine it's easy for a dad to just drink a few beers at night rather than look his kid in the eyes, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, we need a dad who's got, like, you know, he's doing like, you know, kung fu, and his 5-year-old son's doing little kung fu next to him.
Yeah.
There's a video I watched. It was amazing. It was this dude and his like nephew, I guess, and he's doing like some kind of gymnastics training, and the little kid is imitating him, and then dude who's like probably 30 and super ripped does a backflip, and the little kid does a backflip, and the guy lands and looks at this kid. He's like, what, dude? Kid just did a backflip. Because kids want to learn from you. So maybe family structure is correct. I just wanted to clarify. I think
we need to bring that conversation up with American politics, because that's not talked about enough. I think having the two-parent system in the home, I think all these things we need to start talking about.
Did you assume the gender of those parents?
No,
it
was two parents.
No, sorry about that. But I think I was like reading some
statistics. Yeah, mark that time. Like, code cancel Jorge when you just mark that down.
But, I mean, I think, like I said, it's an interesting thing to look at, because I remember when I was covering the you know, riots in every different city, but specifically in Portland, I that's one thing that kind of caught myself is, you know, when everyone's causing destruction, is to say, you know, how many of these people who are out here grew up with just a regular family and have a sense of purpose in life? Because many of the people that I talk to, they almost have like no sense of purpose. And when this George Floyd thing popped out, they finally felt they were part of a movement and they were making a change. I don't know. That's what I kind of took away from being in Portland.
I think it's their dads. I think it's mostly the dad.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I agree.
So a lot of people like to mention whether, you know, people have dads or don't. I don't think that's it, because we brushed on this. I think literally, if you don't have a dad, the studies show that there's going to be – actually, I'm sorry. I should clarify. Actually, the studies have been simplified to just two parents, a two-parent structure. But I think if people don't have a discipline – like a disciplinary parent, and I don't mean by like corporal punishment. I mean literally like sit down son and, you know, or sit down, you know, daughter and, you know, think about what you did and – you need a leadership role and a nurturing role, in my opinion. I think there's probably a lot of these kids. I mean, you look at these Antifa kids. It's like they've never picked up a heavy backpack in their lives. They're so scrawny and frail, but they're angry. They're really angry and purposeless. So I will say, I don't think they actually believe in anything. I really don't.
No, some don't. Like I said, some that I talked to in Portland, they finally felt like this was their calling. They were part of a movement, like they were going to make a change.
But what's their supposed goal? Police brutality? Let me pull up this next story. We got this one from Fox News. Black Lives Matter protesters rally for a victim, leave after learning he was white. The original story reported was that they left when they learned he was a carjacker. I read that and I was like, well, hold on a minute. The Dante Wright dude, he was wanted for aggravated robbery. The crime committed is not the reason they're supporting or opposing the individual. So the word breaks that some dude was killed by the cops. Everybody takes a knee and they're protesting. And then someone's like, wait, hold on. He was a white dude. And then all of a sudden everyone's like, and they all leave. Yeah. So I don't think they really care about police brutality. I think they...
That's a good point.
Yeah, the issue is it a popular narrative?
Well, yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think basically when you say that they don't have an ideology, their ideology is to be oppositional to that which, you know, they've been taught to think is wrong, which is like, it's a very specific set of...
It's tribalism.
Exactly.
And the reason I say that, sorry to interrupt, is that If we were going to say it's about Black Lives Matter and they don't, the reason they're not concerned about the white guys because the race issue, then they wouldn't have been making fun of Asian people for years only to now change and act like they care about Asian people. There's no real ideology. It's just whatever the tribe is focused on now, and it happens to be Black Lives Matter.
It's grifting season.
Well, I mean, by the way, like the reason why I got into media is because like during the 2003 invasion of Iraq, everybody was for the war in Iraq, including CNN, MSNBC, because it was politically incorrect not to be pro-military, which that manifested itself in you better be for the war or else. And so, like, if you look back to the news coverage of that, like, you would have expected those networks, you know, to be, oh, well, George Bush wants to do this and it's terrible. No, not at all. And think about the amount of human suffering that resulted from that. I mean, where are the – who's asking the media professionals who said that we should go into Iraq?
They get away with all of it. So I think mostly what you see, these people, the reason why they would say walk away from a protest when they find out the guy's white is because it's just whatever the popular media narrative is. They're getting their cues. They're being told to do. Bill Maher had this really amazing segment mm-hmm. where he almost got it. It was hilarious. Where he was like, sensationalist negative news coverage about COVID is making Democrats insane. So there was a poll done, New York Times published this, asking Democrats, Republicans, and independents the likelihood of hospitalization for COVID, what they thought it was. More than 50%, I think 75% of Democrats got it wrong. And Republicans got 26% of Republicans were correct. And most of them got it wrong as well, but substantially less than Democrats, and then 20% of independents. And so Bill Maher's like, the media that Democrats consume is constantly negative and it's making them crazy. But Donald Trump is bad. Mm-hmm. That was true. That was all true. Huh. It's like, okay, dude's probably lying. So here's what happens. You get people who are sitting there bored with no purpose, and the media is like, what can we say to manipulate people into giving us money and getting us ad clicks?
Fear porn. It's that fear porn.
Boom. Yep.
Exactly. Extrapolate that same thing to the right. Racism. Which is like, people's perception is one thing, you know, just sitting in their homes. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait a second. You're telling me that these aren't. It's not a party-like atmosphere.
And then the thing is, what they'll do is like CNN or MSNBC is you'll watch the news segment and you get fed that fear porn. And as soon as the commercials hit, hey, here's those painkillers for your back. Here's those painkillers for your back.
Exactly.
And we're going to shove all that.
Dude,
here you go.
Here's the beer.
Is Falsencia right for you? Ask your doctor.
Yeah. And side
you're
effects,
like,
may
you
include
didn't even tell me what
death.
The drug does. I didn't even tell you what it does. You're watching that's an amazing point. You're watching CNN, you're watching Fox or whatever, and they're like, there are people's homes being burned down, children fired upon. Now, we'll be back after these messages. And then the drug commercial stuff.
Yeah, like if you're watching
Might
Fox,
as well be a cigarette commercial.
Yeah,
you know,
people are shaking like smoking.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you'll be watching Fox's Sean Hannity, then after that it goes commercial and it'll be Larry Elder. He'll be like, hey, does your back hurt like mine? Pop these pills. Then the next commercial will be like, hey, did you take those pills? Well, you might get a compensation.
That's the point. They're both hawking the same products on each side.
Yeah.
And all that matters is you just stay to that party line. As long as corporate America is down with it, you're good to go. Well,
I will stop though, and I think Brett Baer and Tucker Carlson do a good job. I think Tucker leans.
Yeah, but what happens to those guys? What happens to Tucker Carlson?
Canceled?
Well, I went on Tucker to say what I saw in Kenosha, right?
Yeah.
And all I said was, Rittenhouse told me this. I saw this. And then CNN says, McGinnis supported the conservative claim that Rittenhouse acted in self-defense. And I said, I emailed him, okay, you either, that's a misstatement.
That's
either have me on to correct the record or prepare for court. They had me on to correct the record. And they did good journalism after that. But that's how it works.
They corrected it?
They had me back on and they did a longer segment with me. Yeah, they did.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, to their credit. But I just had to, you know, I wouldn't have gotten on if I hadn't have literally threatened that.
I'm not a big fan of Fox News as a whole, but Brett Baer does a really good job. Yep. He's a great reporter. Mm-hmm. And Tucker Carlson leans into tribalism every so often, but he does, I think, tend to do a pretty good job. However, I'm not a big fan of Ingram or Hannity. I like Akilmeade is doing a new thing recently. I talked to him. I thought he does an okay job.
I think regardless, it's like let those ideas be exposed to the sunlight and let them die there rather than, okay, who is it who advertised on this program? Okay, you guys all advertise. Do you support this specific statement that they said this one time? Otherwise, you're done. And that's
but listen,
there's no free speech anymore on cable news.
There's Fox News, and then there's literally every other network.
Yep.
And so Fox has, in my opinion, exactly not great individuals, but like I think Greg Gutfeld and The Five do a really good job. And I am a fan of Juan Williams.
Or at least on Fox News, is the anchors could also have different ideologies. On CNN, MSNBC, CNN, MSNBC, it's like, hey, guys, this is the track. You guys all run it. And I think one thing that really opened my – not opened my eyes, but I think it was a good moment for the American people to see was when Tucker Carlson – he was coming to the end of his segment, and it was when he was bashing Amazon and Jeff Bezos. And then he's handing it off to Sean Hannity. Yeah. You can hear and Sean Hannity obviously is hearing Tucker. Then he goes, "Oh, well, we support free market and capitalism." And you just see Tucker do that face. Like,
yeah.
And I thought that was actually a great moment for Fox because it shows, hey, we can at least differ on these things, be on the same network.
But it was by mistake.
Hold on. This is why I said I'm a fan of Juan Williams because they rag on him.
Yeah.
I think he's wrong all the time. Like I'm sitting there watching Jesse laugh at him and I'm like, Juan is wrong, but I'm glad that he's willing to be there with them, taking that punishment and saying what he believes with passion. Some people think he fakes it. I'm like, no, the dude genuinely believes.
If you appear on either of these two echo chambers, then you are this. So I was trying to tell the American public one thing, what I saw. And it was an incredible challenge for me to navigate the landscape after the shooting, because I had to basically, I appeared on Fox first. Okay, you're this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no. That's a misstatement. Here are the facts. Prepare for court or have me on.
I say
you got a threat. You got to threaten.
I say a bunch of wacky stuff on this show, but will the grifters on Twitter ever take the clips of me saying tax the rich or police should resign? They won't do that. They'll take the clips that are like Kyle Rittenhouse acted in self-defense, and then they'll tell everyone on the left Tim Pool is far right or whatever, and then the people who actually watch the show are like, Tim's a liberal.
All right, Tim, I have to say, when
I'd agree. I'd say Tim's a...
I don't know when you're being sarcastic or not now, because I know you've been doing this like, I don't know what would you call it, but I know when you're kind of sarcastic, but then...
It's called gaslighting, I think,
No, hold on, hold on. I have consistently and always said I'm in favor of a higher progressive tax on the wealthy.
Yeah, no, that is true.
Always, always. And the reason I tweeted it is because I was like, I finally started to notice, and I never really cared that much, and I was like, oh, you know what's happening? The manipulation machine, the media machine needs an enemy. They need to make money off this. So they purposefully watch the show and ignore all of like the normal, like kind of liberal positions I might hold and then look for that one thing that's kind of conservative.
Yeah.
And then they take that and they put it on Twitter.
Well, I was on a reality TV show actually. It was not very watched, but it was in 2016 called them. It was called House Divided. It was on Full Screen Media. I think they scrubbed it. It's after Hillary lost. It was a big, we don't need to go there. But basically, you sign a contract where you can basically sign everything away. Like, it's like, we can repurpose your content for whatever to portray you as whatever we want. So I went in there and I'm like, you know, I'm across the board. You can't really put my politics in a box very easily. And so I said, you know, I'd be a libertarian who supports a lot of kind of, you know, big government efforts to even the playing field. But that doesn't fit in a box, right? So I said... Oh, they'd say, what do you think about this? Well, the conservative movement, blah, 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 blah. Oh, what are your politics? I'm, like on camera in my interview, then cut to B-roll and then cut to me saying conservative in a different instance. Conservative.
Wait, they did
that? Oh, yeah. Yeah. What do you think of this girl? Oh, she's pretty. She's super nice. What do you think about the weather outside? It was super hot outside. Oh, she's cut to B-roll hot. So like, I'm telling you, like, no, seriously. And my contract, there's no recourse because the contract you sign, you sign it away. So,
fake.
By the way, please, everybody out there, don't go look this show up because it's really bad. It's
what was the show called again?
It's called Schmaus Divided. But it's like, it just goes to show how you can just take, you say enough words, you're on camera for 8 hours a day, they can choose whatever they want and then use the power of editing to just portray whatever they want.
I love it when there was one clip that went viral of me where there was literal jump cuts, like, and because I was issuing caveats, I was like, here's what I think. Now keep in mind A, B, and C, 1, 2, 3. But with that
exactly.
So they cut out all the caveats, so it's like me going like, I think that Donald Trump is the greatest president ever. Joe Biden is the worst.
What's that app that like people were putting like famous people, they were like, they'll be singing the song like it'll be a deep fake? That scared the crap out of me. That's I think we're heading
into. Take a picture of you and then make a dance.
Yeah, that I was like, oh, this is not good.
Whatever, man. Welcome to the future.
That's coming fast. That might even be happening right now. We don't realize it. Like, if the deep state or, like, you know, the CIA or, like, what else is there? Boston Dynamic, these weird, like, secret programs work. Because if we know that it's pretty advanced. If the public sees that, I can only imagine the stuff that's being worked on behind the scenes.
There were pyramid-shaped objects flying over U.S. naval destroyers.
But I heard they couldn't find a base for these pyramids. So they're actually triangles.
A base?
They couldn't look a pyramid has a base to it, so that means it's three-dimensional, but I don't think they could see the dimensions, right? So it's just triangles, right?
Because they have gravitational warp speed.
Anything that you see publicly, they got something way better.
Yeah.
There's no, so these deepfakes. We know confidentiality exists. We know top secret exists. We know there is, you know, classification. So that means when you see, like, here's our latest robot, well, there are secret things you don't know about.
Wait, so which side of the culture war are the aliens on then? Because we just got to circle
it
back here.
I would honestly,
they're on the anarchy side.
There's two schools of thought on this. The aliens would be on the side of the woke, because you look at, like, you've seen Rick and Morty, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
When the Galactic Federation takes over Earth, everyone's forced to eat pills and do menial labor for the sake of just having a job.
Okay.
And so there's one. I shouldn't say there's two schools, but one idea is that they're on the side of the woke because they need everyone to be drone-like and ideologically homogenous. So there's a one-world system. The Galactic Federation can't work with the United States so long as there's fractured nation-states, which would mean the nationalists are certainly at odds with any alien endeavor to communicate with us, because who would they negotiate with? Each different country? Get out of here. Could you imagine if you were like, we're going to go talk to Russia and they had 10 presidents? You'd be like, nah, it's a waste of our time. Yeah. Get one president and get on with it.
What if they're interdimensional beings, though?
But the other idea is that they're anti-woke because they're looking for... They're looking to work with those that are intellectually discerning and can understand nuance and complex thought. And there's no point in engaging with a drone-like species.
That's what I think.
I mean, I hope, I guess, a Star Trek future of enlightenment values as opposed to Borg-like values.
You guys ever practice
Star Trek reference?
Psychic energy? Just like,
if we ever,
I would say cosmic energy.
Tell me about it.
It's a different thing. I mean, people pick up on vibrations. That's why I have the mustache. It's like, you can pick up on,
it's attached to nerves.
Electromagnetic
underneath.
Vibrations.
Exactly.
Why do cats have whiskers?
Uh-huh. They can sense energy.
Exactly.
For balance.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. Apparently, if you cut cats' whiskers off, they like,
did you ever see those wolves that like, they line up to magnetic north and they're foxes, and then they hunt, but they'll like line up to magnetic north and then they'll like sense the rabbit and then they'll dive and catch it. In
that's
the snow.
That's interesting.
Yeah, dude.
I just know for humans, because I read it in Think and Grow Rich, and I think I've felt it a couple times. It's flow state.
Yeah,
that's flow state. That's like a normal thing for humans. It's you know,
like when you're shredding the gnar.
Yeah,
the gnar.
I think it's you cool your frontal lobe
zone. It's almost, I don't know. It's just like you're in an intense focus.
Yeah.
And I mean, I felt it when I was work. I feel like I felt it even in some of like the chaotic scenes. But yeah, you're just in a flow state. Things just click. It's just one of those.
What do we used to call it?
Ego.
When I used to cover riots, time slows down. It's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
So people describe it as time slowing down, but I think I found a better way to describe it, at least for me. It's not that time slowed down. It kind of feels that way. Like everything, like you can just see everything and you're moving really quick and you're dodging. But to me, I think the easier way to explain it is that when you're normally looking at something, you're focused on a single point and you have peripheral vision, which is kind of out of focus and you can kind of sort of understand. But for me, when I'd be in a riot and some high intensity thing would happen, all of my vision would become the same focus. Mm. Like peripheral vision, my whole field of vision would become crystal clear and I could see everything perfectly as if it was not peripheral. And that, I think, simulated some kind of time slowing down. because your brain is processing everything really, really fast and at once. So it's like you're seeing everything and then you can make a move. It kind of feels like time slows down.
That was probably your flow state then, Tim.
Right.
It's like getting barreled, bro. It's like getting
what?
Barreled.
Barreled?
It's like getting shacked in a wave, dude.
What?
Yeah, like all the water starts coming over you.
You feel that, like you're out there, and then all of a sudden you see like someone raise a weapon, pull a trigger, and then all of a sudden you're just like.
Well, I told the. I mean, when I spoke to police after the shooting, I basically all of my estimations on time were way over, because I was like, I think I interviewed him. Yeah, it was like 40 minutes, and maybe it was an hour. It was 15 minutes, you know. Yeah. But there's so many things leading up when you're. Yeah. So.
I would think if time is a perception of motion, then if you're experiencing more motion, that it would seem like less time was happening.
I wonder if it's actually the perception of time is based upon the amount of information you're processing. So if you're experiencing something that you've experienced a million times before, your brain disregards it. And then time starts speeding up the older you get because your brain is ignoring making the coffee in the morning. It doesn't register anymore. When you're younger, making that coffee for the first or 10th time, it's like relatively new. So when you're in a conflict zone, your brain is basically like, in this circumstance, we must process any and all information that comes to us for the sake of our safety. Time feels like it's going slower because your brain is running all of these calculations and not ignoring anything. So it's like, actually, I guess a better way to put it is, that's the true experience of time, when all of the information is coming into your brain. And then the way we normally experience time is there's gaps because we forget things that don't matter.
That's why I like when I eat a Big Mac, it seems so quick.
Exactly. Because your brain doesn't care. And then you forgot you did it. That's why people can't remember what they had for breakfast.
So good. It just happened so quick. It's gone.
But the first time you eat a Big Mac, every bite takes forever.
I still remember it, actually.
Yeah. No, but like you ask people, what'd you have for breakfast yesterday? And they'll be like, what did I have for breakfast? I can't remember. Because it's irrelevant.
Yeah, it's okay. It's already routine.
But I bet I could ask you about what happened in Kenosha, and you could probably give me crazy details and explain all this crazy story. You never forget it.
That's a very good point. It's like, I guess, you know, the amount of details that stick out in your mind. And that was the interesting part, too, after the fact, is like talking with the New York Times reporters and stitching together all these different streams. And he's like, hey, when you were running after Kyle, like, you stopped. Like, why did you stop? There's something fell on the ground. And I was like, oh, my God. Yeah. I stopped because my gas mask fell out of my bag because I opened my gas mask bag right before I saw Kyle to break out a White Claw to defuse the situation with these guys who wanted to smash my head in. And so I didn't ever clip my gas mask back in because I saw Kyle running and then I just ran after him. And, you know, like,
and that kind of stuff you don't forget.
Exactly.
But you forget what you had for breakfast. You know what I mean? I mean that figuratively. Like, I don't know if you remember what you had for breakfast, but people forget like the little nonsensical things that don't matter. But when you're in the fray, man, everything is.
So you think
That's why everyone said 2020 went. This is weird. I guess this is why everyone said 2020 went by so fast, because we were all sitting in our apartments doing the same thing over and over and over again. So everybody was like, "Wow, I can't believe how."
I feel like 2020 was like 6-7 years, something
really?
Like that. Yeah.
I see a lot of people tweeting like,
was not doing the same thing every day.
It's already December. I can't believe it's already like, whoa, where did this year go? I guess depending on who you were, because for a lot of people, they never experienced pandemic before, so everything was new. For a lot of other people locked in their apartments, everything was redundant.
Like solitary confinement would seem like a million years, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it just depends on the different people, because I've heard both, I guess. You lose track of time. You don't realize some people overestimate, some people underestimate. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, Richard. I feel like 2020 lasted longer than a year. I guess just because all the commotion that we were in. And, I think another interesting thing, too, is when you're on the ground, obviously you have, you know, the flow state, but you start to actually pick up on a lot of tendencies. I think they've used the word tendencies in sports more, but you start to pick up tendencies on protesters, agitators, law enforcement, just little knickknacks that you already know, kind of, you know, you could kind of predict some things before they pop up.
Let's do this. I do want to talk about some cultural stuff in a bit, but I want to do one more because I want to ask you guys your thoughts on what's going to happen. But first, I want to pull up this story because we only briefly mentioned it. Governor Waltz declares an emergency. He's bringing in police from Ohio and Nebraska. You mentioned that the Senate passed a $9 million emergency fund. They're bringing in all these other police. So the verdict is supposed to come soon. The state is declaring an emergency. They have the National Guard already on scene. We don't know what the verdict's going to be. It's possible it's going to be a hung jury because that means they can't come to a decision. That seems possible. On the merits, I've seen some legal analysts say it's not guilty across the board. However, due to the politics, some people are saying either a hung jury or guilty across the board.
I've been seeing the exact same thing. When I reach out to like the professional like lawyer, I think like Will Chamberlain, there's other great lawyers that are like are doing great analysis of it right now. They don't see any way this could be guilty. But one thing some of them have mentioned, they said, hey, this thing is so politicized that the jury just might just do it anyway. This whole thing. And then, Tim, did you get to see, the prosecution's like last sentence was like, you guys say that George Floyd died because his heart was too big. Died because Derek Chauvin's heart was too small, which was odd for me because it's like on most final lines, they end on like a fact or something. Right. They go off that, but mm-hmm. it kind of, he more did it for like media. I don't know. That's what I took it. I don't know what you guys thought.
The most watched trial in history, I guess. Well, so first I'll ask you guys, I don't know if you've been following, I've been following the court case, but you guys have been on the ground. So I don't know if you've been following a lot of the trial stuff. But I'm curious what you guys think, based on what you've already seen, based on your experience, what's coming next, what's going to happen in Minnesota?
Richie?
I mean, I don't think it really matters, honestly.
Like the verdict?
And like we actually, when we were on the ground the last night in Brooklyn Center, I commented to Jorge after the fact, it ended up being a completely peaceful evening. But at the beginning, like Jorge was like inquiring to me like, yo, you want to go live, man? And I was so bugged out by all the people, all the anti-media sentiment, all the anti-corporation, just like the anger in the crowd was so palpable that Jorge's like hitting me up. And like, I knew that there was one of the organizers in our area. And I was just like, Jorge was like, wow, Rich is kind of being a jerk. But I just like I was bugged out that honestly, even me acknowledging him was going to tip people, everyone was just so mad that, I don't know, I think it's a powder keg that has nothing to do with the actual realities of the case or anything like that. It's just, it's going to pop off.
No matter what happens.
Because, yeah, and it's just like lockdowns, it's economics, it's politics, everything.
I just want to add a little bit real quick. I agree with Rich because like when you talk to folks on the ground, for them it's like, if they don't hear the word murder, it just like doesn't matter. And I just think that no matter what happens, we're going to see an eruption. I'm going more off the like my if it's like a prediction thing, I actually don't think the riots are going to hit the magnitude that it did last summer. I think last summer, too many factors rolled in: COVID, the unemployment. I mean, I think some people were making like $600 per week on unemployment. I think all that kind of factored into that. I don't know if we could reach that, but I agree with Rich. I just think if they don't hear the word like murder in there, it's not going to be good.
But Maxie Waters said first degree. Well, there's second degree and third degree murder.
He's on trial for murder, just not premeditated murder.
Yeah. So she wants first degree. I think it's a good point to say that they're going to say he was never tried for the true crime of first degree murder, and so no matter
what
happens.
How well of a job do you think Eric Nelson did with Derek Chauvin? You think he at least put a good case in front of the jury where there's no reasonable doubt?
I'll say this. From my personal opinion, as someone who knows nothing, knows little about the law relative to any of these lawyers, I felt like the state failed to prove its case. They couldn't convince me that, like, dude, I made several videos angry at Chauvin when all this went down, and I was like, this is crazy, and I was like, he shouldn't have done this. And then I watched this trial, and I'm like, they did nothing to prove that Chauvin caused the death of George Floyd. They only gave me maybe it happened this way. In fact, the prosecution said at one point, maybe it was his enlarged heart, maybe not. But Chauvin, and I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Maybe?
But by the way, it has to be, it doesn't, okay, so in order to prove murder, it has to be beyond a reasonable doubt that he intended to kill him in that moment, in that space.
No, it doesn't. So I got this wrong. It's because they're doing the felony murder rule. They're saying he had to have the intention to use force against Floyd for felony assault that Floyd died from. So it's the felony murder rule.
If you're attempting felony assault, then they die as a result of it, then it's felony murder.
Yes. And for murder three, the equivalent, according to legal instructions analysis, would be like murder three is if you're shooting a gun randomly into a crowd and you kill somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're doing something that can result in death, but you weren't targeting somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to be honest.
The charges, Tim, we were talking about that, how like they won't even, you were saying that they probably won't even get to 40 years, which is probably going to anger, this crowd.
I watched the defense and I was shocked when I heard the prosecution's own witness admit Derek Chauvin could have used more force, even a taser if he wanted to. That was the state's witness on cross saying this. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, okay, I'm done. Now you mean to tell me that you're claiming he committed assault against George Floyd? and he could have legally used more force than he did, then how is what he did a felony assault? He used less force and he was allowed to as a cop. I'm not happy it happened, man. But if the cop is, if your own witness is saying that, so I'll say this. The state did a bad job. The defense did a pretty good job. Near the end, the state started doing a bit of a better job hitting the points they needed to hit. And the defense slipped on their own expert witness. But ultimately, after looking at everything, it was just the state's own witnesses firing shots back at them and hurting their case. And it looks like the defense's strategy the whole time was to have a short case so that the state went for several days.
Mm-hmm.
Then the defense was substantially less. I think they only had like two or three witnesses. Mm-hmm. But then they did like 3 hours of closing arguments, laying out all of the cases. I got to tell you, man, the defense's closing arguments, wow. It's for me, it's beyond a reasonable doubt.
But
what I'm saying is I have – if it's reasonable doubt that he committed a crime is all it takes, for me, I think they've actually proven Chauvin's innocence.
But is this one case, this particular example, is it just too politicized that the jury's going to say, you know what? We got to convict this guy because it's either our life or the city's or across the U.S. I don't know. This Bro, one is a – is
the city – a city councilwoman – voted to fire the city manager, and she said it's because I was scared they would retaliate against me. So I think the jury's sitting there, and they're going like, I don't care about this guy. He's guilty no matter what anyone says because I don't want to get shot.
That's where I think they're at. I mean, well, I don't know.
I mean, at a certain point, like you said, I mean, that's your civic duty, right? And you've whether you like it or not, you've stepped into that role. Like, am I going to cater my what I saw on the night of Kenosha just because I feel like people want me to say one thing or another? Like, no, dude. Obviously not. And like, you, at a certain point, you know, if you're serving, you gotta determine what role you're serving in that particular situation. And if you're witness or if you're a jury member, you have to just do your best. And then, I mean, I don't know if someone wants to, you know,
if it were me on the jury, and after everything I've seen, I'd be saying not guilty. I could probably be convinced of maybe manslaughter. Like if we argued over whenever the evidence, and I heard compelling case, but I'd probably still be leaning towards not guilty. And I'm not gonna change my views based on what Antifa, the left, or the media would say of me. I tweeted that, you know, the Kyle Rittenhouse situation convinced me to finally, like, was one of the things that finally convinced me I got to vote for Trump, because the way the media was lying and portraying everything and demonizing this kid. Who, far from perfect, but still, it was, you know, self-defense. If the media is going to be this
I have no
bad,
comment on that, obviously.
You know, for sure.
Yeah.
But for me, that's what it felt like. And then Trump pinned the tweet, and it became a talking point. The White House press corps was asking the, you know, Kayleigh McEnany, like, Trump pinned this tweet. I'm going to say what I think, even if they're going to smear me over it. If Antifa threatens me, I'll tell you this. I got to be honest. I'm the kind of person to where if one of these Antifa guys or anybody threatens me, I double down.
Yeah,
I'm like, bring it.
I've gotten them from both sides because also I'm a victim in the criminal complaint. So, like, the people who support, you know, who are anti Kyle Rittenhouse have come after me because, like, oh, you know, whatever, this guy's a terrorist, blah blah blah. And then the other side is saying you're a wuss, you know, you're not a victim. And like, I just have to say what I experienced, you know, in the moment. So like, what. Right. And the prosecution might take what I say and, you know, make it to suit their role in the situation. Yeah, it's an adversarial relationship.
It's really fascinating watching a trial like this, and you really start to understand framing, perception, perspective, and it's really interesting how the truth can be massaged by both sides to fit their needs, and like how you can omit certain information to change.
Especially when you're the guy stuck in. I remember when I woke. I didn't actually view my role like very. I didn't, you know, think, oh, this is really my duty to do it until the next morning I saw a Vice article just saying open fire. And that terminology, like, is just, it's no concern for what happened on the ground. And it was like, okay, I can't wait until the trial. I obviously have to say something before.
But there's politics at play, man. I'd imagine you're going to get a lot more heat from the left.
I don't know. I've honestly gotten a lot of crap from...
from the right,
from the pro Kyle. I don't know. Honestly, like, I don't think it matters. Like, who I'm getting crap from,
exactly.
Because I'm still gonna stay the same no matter what. It's pretty simple. It's just what I saw and heard. But at the same time, it has been definitely an educational experience that maybe I can talk about after the trial. Because until then, I'm just going to try my best.
Yeah, I think there was also, too, on the Kyle Rittenhouse, there's just that story. I believe there was that man who, like, worked in the medical field, and he, like, donated, like, $10 into Kyle Rittenhouse. Yeah. And, like, a local journalist was like, we're doing an investigation. We're at his front door and asking him about his donation. It's like, dude, it's $10. I mean, okay.
You know, I think it was despicable. If it were me, though, I don't know if the guy answered him or whatever. If, like, a reporter knocked on my door first, I'd be like, did you see the no trespassing sign? Like, you can go. But if it was a reporter, like, we want to get a comment, I have leftists hit me up for, like, ridiculous stories. I answer them to the best of my abilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I think there's a lot to be said for that instead of shutting it down.
Well, you know? I see a lot of conservatives will be like, no, to a request for comment. I had someone hit me up from a leftist smear machine, and I wrote him a book. Like, I wrote, like, 3,000 words.
Yeah.
Went in-depth and, like, bold things, and I'm like, I got all the time today to talk about what I think. So, like, here you go, man. Have at it. And I'm very respectful and nice. I'm like, appreciate that you reached out and gave me the opportunity to say my piece and hope, wish the best for you and have a good day, good sir.
And then, but then when people see that from that outlet, then that basically transcends that gap that we're talking about, that schism between the two trenches. Like,
what they do is when you supply them with enough words, they can selectively pull votes because you
But that's why you gotta fight that battle. Like, I have basically been fighting that battle to get, you know, my word out to both sides. And I think actually the one piece that I'm most proud of came out on the Huffington Post. And Mary, to her credit, like, basically wrote this entire article about Rosenbaum's last moments. And just because of where people perceive me as coming from politically, they didn't care about my account of that. But, you know, those are the same people that are supposed to be saying, you know, this guy died and we should remember him. And so, like, that account of his last moments, I think, is important to just bring people back to the humanity of, it doesn't matter what this guy's ideology is. It doesn't matter the fact that he literally came from a mental hospital, apparently, right before he got shot. Right. And then I have people all over the place. Why did you try to save that sexual pedo? Or why did you try to? It's like, dude, if somebody's dying in front of you, that's the point. It doesn't matter what their ideology
is. This is interesting, though, because the defense in the Chauvin trial pointed out this is not about the perspective of a doctor who's watched hundreds of hours of footage for a year. It's not about the perspective of, you know, individuals who showed up after everything already happened and then told you their experience. It's the perspective of the officer who was there and what he felt, what mm-hmm. he perceived, and what mm-hmm. he knew. Mm-hmm. And Derek Chauvin is not a, you know, cardiopulmonologist who understands what a seizure is. His perspective is George Floyd kicking is a resisting arrest. Now, a doctor may watch that later and say that was a seizure, but how would a street cop know that? For you, when you see a guy shot and he's on the ground, how are you supposed to know what his history is or where he came from? All you know is there's a guy in front of me bleeding. I have no idea who the guy is. He could be a saint for all I know. He could be a, mm-hmm. a local youth pastor, or he could be a, you know, a diddler.
Exactly. And by the way, Kyle ran back up behind me after the shooting, and I screamed at him to call 911, not even concerned with who it was or whatever. And then, you know, after the fact, realizing it's the guy who had, he had a gun right behind me, but my concern was like, for one thing, it's humanity.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wasn't like, excuse me, what are your politics?
It's like, hindsight is 20/20. It's like AOC, when she lied about what happened at the Capitol, the fascinating thing about it, she told that story where she, like, hid in her bathroom, and she was like, oh no, they got in the building. That story was clearly fabricated because it included details you would only know in hindsight. At the time that AOC went to, you know, at the time she cited was, like, you know, just around 1 p.m., no one had gotten any buildings. There was no one even trying to get any buildings. Only because a day later, we saw what happened, she now says, at that time, I was scared they got the building, because she's calling upon the anger and the fear people had from the building being breached. But that morning, nobody knew that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you know she made it up. People often forget about situational context. So they look at, like, the Rittenhouse thing, and they're like, why did you help that guy who's a bad person? You're like, you found that out, like, a month later, dude. I'm there on the ground. I don't know if this guy's having a seizure. I don't know if he's a criminal. I just know that there's a guy in front of me who's resisting, or I know there's a guy in front of me who's hurt.
And it's always easy for people on the outside to say, oh, you should have done this, should have done that, until they're in that moment. And I think, I don't know if you want to maybe add on this, Rich. I think what maybe happened to you was just fight or flight, right? I think, you know, your mind
there's,
just,
there was no time to make any decisions. And, like, I don't know. I mean, I look back, it's like, could I have done anything else to?
Yeah. And for me, like, knowing, you know, Richie personally and, you know, working under him, you know, to me, when I heard that, I was like, man, like, it feels good to be associated with someone that is willing to do that for someone. Like, I was like, you feel a moment probably, like, hey, I'm glad that, like, to call him, like, my editor or whatever, because to me that was like, you know, when people ask me, like, what would you do? I'm like, I'm out. I mean, I'm out. So I don't think I could have done the same thing. So I think it was a brave thing to do. And, yeah, I thought it was something.
Didn't matter at the end of the day, you know, ultimately, like, was there anything that could have been done to save his life? Like, the toothpaste can't go back into the tube, but you just think to yourself, like, why did that situation exist in the first place? And the only thing that I can do from here is to take that human experience and actually, you know, try to express to people that, you know, like, it's not just a video game. And, like, I've seen so many times when we have these crazy situations unfolding in front of us and people are just on their phones and they're just keen on, like, what the next tweet is. And, like, at a certain point, the game becomes reality and it's like people suffer and die as a result of what we're seeing on the ground right now. And it's not just people who die there. It's people who die as a result of the narrative, you know, that it's like, how many people are economically suffering because, you know, this news outlet wants to push this narrative or whatever.
Remember that video, I think it was from Portland, where someone got hit with a rubber bullet in their leg and they had a mild bruise with some bleeding. And then they're like, we got to put on a tourniquet, man. Tourniquet medic. And the kid, the guy who got hit in the leg is crying and he's like, I don't want to lose my leg. And it's like, wow. These kids think they're playing tiddlywinks when they're playing, you know, they're playing for keeps. They go out there and they think, like, you need a tourniquet, man. It's like, dude, his leg was fine. He was, like, bleeding a little bit. You put some gauze on it, you know, just put a bandage over it, you're fine. But these people are going out there thinking that they're literally the resistance fighting a war, and they're playing a game. And then people get hurt, and then they – it's insane to me. I guess it's people without purpose. They wish they were, their grandparents or great-grandparents storming the beaches of Normandy. When in fact, they're just a bunch of kids with umbrellas and they weigh 100 pounds soaking wet. And they think they're literally the anti-fascist coalition fighting the Nazis.
Yeah, and I think I was on the ground, you know, covering these events. And I think I forgot who I told it to. I'm like, you know, because you'll be somebody at these events. And then, you know, when they do the speeches part, everyone wants to give their speech. Everyone thinks that their speech is going to make the difference. And I remember turning to one of our fellow reporter. I'm like, why does everyone think they're Malcolm X, bro? Like, everyone thinks that, like, they're going to have their Malcolm X moment. And I just think it's nice. Lost purpose. And I think when people see something like this, it's tribal. It makes them feel like they're part of something. Maybe it feels like they're part of a revolution. They're going to overturn the police state. But
what's the answer then? Like, if those people don't have purpose and they're out there for those reasons and they don't have anything else to turn to, then how do we fix that? And, like, what in our society can we...
Like, I don't know how to fix that, obviously, but I think the root problem goes back to the family structure and the home. And I think as a country, we need to do that, too. I think one of the biggest mistakes that I think that we made as a country is, for example, with like, women... We, like, now make it seem bad that if a woman wants to stay home and, like, nurture her kids and just be a stay-at-home mom and just raise, like, three kids for them to be good citizens, we, like, look down upon that because now it's like, oh, well, wow, you're staying home? You could be, like, out there. You could be a CEO of a company and you could be doing this. And I just think that the whole system of not having that family structure, I think, is leading to a lot of these root problems.
But also, like, we are in a current situation where even if moms wanted to stay at home, for their kids, they can't because wages have stagnated for 40 years. And so that the point is that in this whole situation, and that's why I mentioned the fact that now that Trump is gone, it's a whole different ball game, is because just prior to that, during the Trump era, it was like, well, you're either for Trump or you're not. And now that he's gone, it's like, wait a second, all the underlying problems that caused people to go to the streets in the first place on both sides of the political spectrum, those all still exist. And so, like, unless we address those, then this will just continue. Everybody will continue to dig deeper and deeper. So, like, I guess the only point is, like, how do we address those underlying problems in a responsible manner in the media? Because that's why we're here, in my opinion.
And I think you're right. I think it's an economic problem. I think one of the biggest things that I think on the right they just fail to talk about. I don't know why. For instance, like, when someone on the left comes out and says, "We want free college." People on the right make fun of, like, oh my God, look at this guy wants free college and blah, blah, blah. I paid my way. But it's just like, well, if you look at college, now we have 22 year old couples graduating, 40,000 in debt, 80,000, sometimes more.
Never had a job in their
life. Exactly.
And
then now mm-hmm. that 22 year old looks at his girlfriend and says, hey babe, I love you. I want to get married. I want to have kids. but we're both in debt. Let's put it off till 30. And I think
there's
a lot of factors in this, so it's complicated, but I think that's one of the systems that we need to look at is now younger people are graduating with debt. They're not having kids. I know in the United States, we have a birth rate problem, and it's not helping. That's why I just made a tweet a week ago. I know I'm probably going to get roasted a little bit for this, but I said, if you actually want to save the country, get married and have five kids. You actually are serving your country if you do that. And your five kids.
Mark that time code to cancel Jorge.
But I do believe, you know, corporations, politics, politicians, they all have made it harder for us to have families, have kids. And I think we're now seeing that destruction come out in society when it comes to riots and protests and all the crime that we're seeing.
That's why they're going into schools, though. They're going to schools with critical race theory to make sure that even if you have kids, they're going to indoctrinate them before you can.
Yeah, they want to keep people confused. When I say they, I mean like the Federal Reserve. We've got to default on that interest to the Federal Reserve and evolve our economy to a cryptocurrency economy.
But I got to say, Ian, when you bring up the Federal Reserve, you're basically like, imagine there's a giant Mecha Godzilla and you're pointing to one of his claws on his finger going, that's the problem right there, that one finger. And we're like, bro, it's Mecha Godzilla.
Yeah, but if you hit it with a laser, it will accelerate the heat and then it will send the whole thing into psychic shock.
I don't think so, man. There's so much.
It has many weak points. The finger is one of them.
It is a good point. The Federal Reserve is a broken system that basically allows special interests to extract the value of the working class and the labor force and then buy ridiculous things with it. We don't even know what they're doing. But the bigger problem is just before you can even get to that, you got to deal with the fact that Mechagodzilla's got a force field, the media. How do you get people to actually, you know, help you build the powerful laser to take out Mechagodzilla's index finger?
Dude, you got a pretty legit operation here. I mean, that's a testament to the fact that somebody who speaks the alternative, you know, something that's beyond just like the corporate talking points, they can succeed.
Rods from God?
The riot squad, at least, you know, I can give Jorge like 1 to 2 sandwiches a week when he does a real good job.
Tacos, please.
So in terms of like Fox News talking to you and CNN talking to you about what happened with Rittenhouse, where do you think you were able to like actually express the truth the best?
On CNN after I threatened to sue them.
Did the CNN gave you the best opportunity?
Yeah, after I threatened to sue them.
I like that.
I'm serious. Like it was only, and it was the same guy who did the original story, and I give him a lot of credit for coming back and doing it. But also I think, you know, probably I don't really know what happened behind the scenes, but probably somebody was like, you screwed this up. You better not get us sued.
Now throw an independent media and out of all the different platforms that exist.
So I think that the independent media has kind of, if you're digital media, right, then you're only as powerful as how many views you get. You're only as relevant as how many retweets you get. That's why Jorge, Shelby, and I, and everybody at the caller, it's like, yo, don't use terminology just to get likes. Don't say just exactly what your audience wants to hear. And in fact, oftentimes we're doing quite the opposite. But over time, hopefully, you know, that
I think pays off. The challenge is, you know, I think it's hilarious. The left is like, you know, would call me a grifter, but it's based upon their pulling bunk clips. I wish I would just, you know, look, there's so many people on YouTube who just say the most outrageous shock stuff and they get the biggest views. And it ain't my channel. Certainly there are people who criticize the titles I use. And I'm like, those are my actual opinions, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'm not simply saying things for the sake of, you know, trying to build the biggest audience. Otherwise, I probably have a lot bigger audience. Honestly, I'd be playing Minecraft, Fortnite, or some other modern video game, which is family friendly. Just do this.
Exactly.
You open a private browser and go to YouTube, and I assure you, people who are in politics, I think for the most part, aren't grifting. I think they believe it. They just believe wrong things. And that includes me. That includes progressives. I think for the most part, most people in politics aren't grifting, except for the corporate media that are trying to get their foot in the door. I think independent media tends to be all right.
Yeah, at least in terms of corporate media, for sure is grifting because they'll literally just get a PR statement from the Democratic Party and they'll just report it. So MSNBC, to me, they're just PR for the Democratic Party. So grifting season all day for them as
is
a whole
CNN
tip, Jesus
not
would
that?
Say. No, well,
but yes. I think it's actually, and I hear, you know, people say this all the time, like, oh, you know, corporate media, they want this or they want that. It's not to say that, like, because like working at NBC and MSNBC, I would say the real revealing thing was that not the fact that like everything is scripted per se, it's still live, but if you step out of line from those, you know, you're in the B block, right? You're this guest and your perspective is this. If you stray from that, you say something that was unpredictable to those producers, bye-bye. You'll never be on MSNBC ever again.
And so Greenwald
it's like, yeah,
that.
Exactly. So it's like, it's not that it's like, you know, you have Zucker being like, you have to say this or else. It's like really just, it's the same thing that you see with like people wanting to post like, you know, a black box on their Instagram. It's like everybody else is doing it. And if I don't do it, then I'm the outcast. And so yep. It's like self-policing. It's not like somebody has to stand up there and say,
man,
do this.
Where's punk rock gone, man? No, seriously.
That's the Daily Caller.
It's in your heart.
No, listen. These punk bands are like pro-establishment. I don't know if you guys noticed the Bad Religion.
Oh yeah,
pun that I made earlier.
I think I made a joke about it with Richo. I was like, it's funny how like everyone thinks they're part of the revolution. I'm like, Amazon is on your side. Netflix is on your. Everyone's like, oh, the revolution will not be televised. I'm like, Amazon and Netflix are on your side.
I gotta tell you, when Bad Religion is on the side of Amazon,
yikes.
Something happens.
Sounds like it'll be a quick revolution if that's the case. It'll be very quick. Quicker. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Please tell me Rage Against the Machine is still hopefully.
Wait, what? They're rage on behalf of the machine. That's been the meme for a long time. Yeah. Rage Against the Machine is on the side of Amazon.
No, thank you. I'm going to do what you tell me. Thank you. I'm going to do what you tell me.
Yeah. Yep. It used to be F you. I won't do what you tell me. Now it's yes, sir.
Yes.
I'll do what you tell me. Or actually, it's F you. Do what they tell you.
Oh, that's worse. Yeah.
Yep. Wow. That's what it is. They're coming to your house. They're coming to your business. They're burning it down. They're not saying they're going to do what they're being told. They're going to say you do what you're told, or else.
Oh my god.
Yeah, man.
Come on, Rage.
That was hilarious.
We were better than that, man. growing up on Bulls on Parade.
When all these punk bands, you know, are all of a sudden like pro machine.
Yeah,
that's hey, there you go. The machine won, I guess.
I don't know what punk is anymore. I think of it as just like counterculture.
But not even punk too. Like hip hop and rap was super against establishment, man. Like back in the '90s, you had that NWA, F the Police, and all that. And then now, dude, it's like, you know, they're on Amazon and Nike, and it's like. What happened to hip hop? Used to be so rebellious.
Corporations figured it out, man. You look at Public Enemy and the things they were saying, and the corporations were like, how can we stop these people yelling at us? I know. We'll adopt their message. It won't hurt us in the least bit, and they'll have no choice but to be like, I guess we agree with
And they have these rappers tap dancing for Joe Biden.
That's exactly right.
In the '90s, they were jilling your
dad, that's
bro.
The point, though. That, at the time, I talked to my mom about this. Shout out to mom one more time. but seriously, though, because my parents lived in Washington, D.C. during the counterculture movement of the late 60s and early 70s. But at that time, were corporations like, support the anti-Vietnam War effort? No, they were not. And so at that time, counterculture is a critique on the mainstream, right? But when counterculture becomes the mainstream, then... There's no critique. It's just the mainstream. So we're meta now. Like the critique is the mainstream now. So what ground do we have to stand on collectively that we're critiquing?
We're also watching too, Richie. We're watching the realignment happen in real time. You know, back in the 90s or when your parents were growing up, the left was anti-big business. And, you know, they're anti-corporations.
Yeah,
they were, you know.
That was me. I was anti-Bush. And now all of a sudden people are like.
The left in the 70s would be mad at the wages that Amazon is paying their employees. Yeah. Now they're just happy that Amazon puts a Black Lives Matter thing while they're shipping a product on Amazon Prime.
But to be fair, the progressives don't like Amazon. It's like
the
liberal, neoliberal, uninitiated, mindless Democrat voters.
There it is. Yeah,
because I'll tell you this. Look, I don't care for the grifter type, you know. I shouldn't say grifter. I'm trying to be nice. But there's a lot of progressives who seem to be tribalist, and they will defend the neo-lib mindless Democrat voters. But there are some progressives, pro-gun, anti-establishment, don't like Joe Biden. I'm like, look, we agree on all that stuff. So I'm not going to argue with you. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I mean, we can argue about economics as friends, and we can have a good time and then celebrate that we're all armed to the teeth and stand in opposition to the war machine and the manipulation of massive corporations. I'm cool with the progressives on that one and the conservatives on that one. I think the libertarian – actually, I'll put it this way. There's a funny meme from Political Compass Memes. And it's the libertarian left and the libertarian right. Mm-hmm. And the libertarian left says defund the police, and the libertarian right smiling. And then the next one is him, the libertarian left grinning and saying, because they're racist. And the libertarian right getting angry. Like, dude, yeah. I don't care what your reason is for it. You know what I mean? I think the libertarian right and left are both in agreement.
When do you think – I mean, it's very clear that – the kind of populist left and the populist right have a much, you know, an anti-establishment bend to them, which is like, let's reassess the way that, you know, we do government, et cetera. When are those two sides going to see eye to eye? Because right now, what we're seeing is the left basically being held hostage by the fact that Biden, who's a centrist, was elected. And now everyone's like, wait a second. No, you're not.
It's the media.
No. The problem is high profile leftists who are pro 2A and anti-establishment willing to capitulate to establishment Democrat voters because they want power. I'm not going to name these people, but I tell you this.
Power or approval?
They want power. So they don't like Donald Trump. The populist left doesn't like the idea of hard nationalist capitalism, whatever. They want socialism. So they feel it's easier to topple Joe Biden than Trump. So they align themselves with neo-lib establishment Democrat types. That's why that's why AOC votes for Nancy Pelosi. If they were actually look what Marjorie Taylor Greene's doing. The Republicans hate her guts. Mm-hmm. She's like going nuclear.
She raised like $3 million last
year. Yeah, it was massive. And now she's trying to get Maxine Waters booted. She's just absolutely like taking a torch to the machine.
Yeah.
And the Republicans hate her guts for it.
Yeah, Majors being what AOC was supposed to be, because AOC was supposed to be anti-establishment, force the vote, Medicare for all, $15 minimum wage. You ain't getting none of that.
So this
no
is the,
force the vote.
This is the problem. I can look to some of these leftists who are pro 2A, anti-establishment. I'm like, that's a good start. And then they're like, but I will always throw my hat in with the establishment because it gets me power. I'm like, okay, now we got a problem.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tale as old as
like
time
for me,
right
it
there.
It was like if you're you know, because I'm always speaking to progressives, but if you're a progressive voter, you wanted $15 minimum wage, universal health care, and all that stuff, you didn't get any of it. You didn't get it. And the progressives that in Washington, D.C. didn't even fight
for
or force the vote.
Let's pull this into
perspective.
You're not
even $15 minimum wage. That's crazy.
The Trump voters hate the Republicans. They hate Mitch McConnell. They don't like Lindsey Graham. They call Mike Pence a traitor. Donald Trump was aggressive and stormed in and took over the Republicans. Bernie Sanders stormed in and got shoved down. And the Bernie Sanders types decided to agree with the Democrats for the sake of just maintaining some kind of leverage. And the Trump supporters took over.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Republicans fought Trump, agreed with Russiagate, tried to get him out, and then literally did.
It's interesting you say that, because a lot during the 2016 election, a lot of the Daily Caller subscribers, followers were all Bernie supporters.
Wow.
But after, and it goes to show that Hillary Clinton was kind of ideologically representative of the centrist establishment, which is like, we'll just keep those wars going and everything
and
will be fine. We came, we saw, he died. Ha 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 ha.
I think you also saw a generation of voters on the left and right that said, well, why would we keep voting for these people? They just shipped our jobs to China. My dad is now on opioids and we're getting a divorce and our family's breaking up. So that's a thing. But for me, the reason why we're not seeing the populist left and the populist right come more together than it already is because of media. Like I said, if you turn on Fox and anyone on that agrees with Bernie Sanders on free education and free healthcare, they're a Nazi and a communist.
Yep.
When it's like, yo, when it comes to the healthcare system and big education, they're going to screw you over whether you're a Republican or Democrat.
I don't think Tucker does that. I think Fox has...
Not Tucker, but Fox, I think the majority...
I think it's mostly the mainstream press. Why is it that Tucker is willing to have on Antifa? Why is it that
Tucker has Jimmy Dore on?
The Koch brothers, Koch brothers, and George Soros very much have the same, you know. Well, Koch brothers, sorry, RIP, another Koch brother.
It's establishment politics, man.
It's a combo of that, and I think a hormonal imbalance in society due to obesity. It's like the large 60%+ of Americans are considered obese since like the late 90s. It's like these people are under mind control. They've become pawns to this system and they're like going at each other. I never get more fired up and ready to rip this thing down than when I'm fasting. When I don't have enough, when I come at this from lack, I get riled up. I get the energy. So, and that's what we're missing. That's where punk rock is gone.
Why is Antifa burning the system down? They're well fed.
Well, that's a tough question. There's a lot of different individuals
with
a lot of reasons.
Just on a real quick on a tip that Richie brought on the Koch brothers, if you guys remember in 2015, when people would interview Bernie Sanders about his 2016 run, they would say, do you support open borders? Bernie Sanders would say, absolutely not. Open borders is a big establishment move by the Koch brothers.
That's right.
The thing is, now he moved into a window, and I think Bernie doesn't believe it, but he just has to say it because he's on that side. Now he has to say, I wasn't for that and blah, blah, blah. But even Bernie said in his 2015 interviews, if we do open borders, it hurts American wages first.
Yeah. That's right. Well, how about we jump over to Super Chats and see what the audience has to say. So for all of you that are listening, make sure you smash that like button. Share the podcast if you really like it. That really helps. And subscribe. And if you're listening on iTunes or Spotify, leave us a good review. Give us 5 stars. Let's see what we got. Trip Sucks says, I have been a pro graffiti writer for 15 years and I've tagged 20 countries, including Antarctica. I'd love to help decorate a portion of the skate park and give you all a demo of how it's done. What's the best method to contact?
That's pretty dope.
Pitches@timcast.com.
That's epic.
Should now be live for anybody who has an idea. We're taking pitches on movies, video games. That's a lot harder to do. Short films, movies, documentaries, shows, and art projects. But I will advise you, we're going to get a ton of emails. And I can only just say serious pitches only, because with all due respect, I want to be nice, because I really do appreciate everybody who's interested. We do get a lot of people who have no relevant experience in many areas asking to do jobs that they can't do. I mean, I'm trying to be, you know, again, with all due respect, I appreciate the interest in some of these jobs. But if you're someone who's like not worked in media and you want to now all of a sudden make a video, there's a lot you probably don't realize you don't know. And so it's not as easy to do. But, you know, I think we're definitely accommodating for a lot of people. So pitches at timcast.com. All right. Tommy Durgarian says, amazing content as always. Shout out for my company, Level Ride Concepts. Message me about member decals I can make for you at Level Ride Concepts. Cool. All right, let's see. Alex Thomas says, are you avoiding talking about BitClout because you have your own site you have being developed? I don't know what BitClout is.
Huh.
Christian Jamagochian says, Tim, I'm seeing videos about the grind bar and compound all over YouTube. You're becoming Deer Deck 2.0, complete with your own fantasy factory in the mountains. Keep That's on sick. Being awesome, y'all.
Ew,
a bunch sick. Of videos are popping up about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. Yeah, they're popping up, the grind bar.
My friends, the vlog is live. It is Cast Castle, and you can find it very easily on this YouTube channel. That's in the community catchy. Section. I linked to it. I don't know if I said a URL or anything. I just made a YouTube channel. I was like, you know, it's actually, I think it's a really old YouTube channel. I just call it Cast Castle and then put a video on it, because you just start somewhere, and that might not be the name moving forward. Probably not. I was like, we filmed a vlog. We're going to put it up. This dude grinded the grind bar. The other day we filmed, we have a race car that goes 100 miles an hour, and we literally jumped the whole garage.
It was awesome. How far did it go?
Dude, it went so far.
I don't know, 100 feet?
It went way over. Far. It's a big garage, not a regular garage. It's like a big garage with a skate park in it, and it just went.
Multiple camera angles.
It's going to be fun. We're going to get that up soon.
Yeah. That was awesome. That was yesterday, right?
Dermy Wormy says, in regards to Falcon and Winter Soldier, you need to talk to Gary from Nerdrotic. We will have a bonus segment coming up where I will get into all of that stuff, because I think Falcon and Winter Soldier is actually nuanced and relatively anti-woke. I do. I think that Falcon is realizing the problems of racism from anybody. And I'll get into that. We'll save it for the bonus segment. All right, let's see where we're at. Gorechild says, Tim, you should clarify. You said Maxine Waters might be caused to overturn the election, not the trial. Oh, is that what I did?
First thing you said.
Oh, really?
We didn't want to interrupt you. You're on one. We didn't want to interrupt you, but.
Oh. Whoops.
You said it with so much conviction that there was no, going, you know?
Yeah, it's all good.
I wonder if YouTube's going to understand I just misspoke.
Hopefully.
I think I can answer your question about why these Antifa kids are rioting, even though they're not eating properly. I don't think they are hormonally balanced, because fasting, you got to eat healthy and then stop eating for 16 hours. And these people are probably like just eating crap maybe and chicken nuggets, man. And don't have a good home life. So their psychology is all out of whack.
Vitamin D.
The home life. He knows what I'm talking about, man.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a big thing.
All right. Sonny James says, Tim, I think you're exactly right about fifth generational warfare in regards to foreign sponsored propaganda. However, I think you're totally wrong about the drone capture of Uyghur men taken to re-education camps. I saw men being drafted for the purpose of war. Interesting. Well, a lot of people, you don't really know what the video is. We just trust news sources, right?
That's that video of like a bunch of people in blue.
Yeah, kinda, with their heads shaved. Bradley L5000 says, Tim, thanks for the Dogecoin tip. Made a little money. Guest suggestion,
yeah,
David
buddy.
Park and Jack Murphy, the other Jack from Team House Podcast. There's another Jack Murphy?
Oh.
Uh-oh.
I didn't realize there was more than
we're
one.
We're both on at the same time. Tomorrow is the day
definitely
of the
not.
Doge.
Jonathan Drown says, Tim, it's easy to run away when you have $1 million to drop on a compound in the middle of nowhere. Ian is at right for once.
Facts.
I will just say, nobody
facts.
Who buys $1 million property actually has $1 million. When they talk about celebrities who bought like a $5 million property, they may have put 0% down, and they may have gotten a crappy interest rate. Everybody assumes that, like, I think Donald Trump put it best when he tells that story where he like pointed to one of his kids and said, see that homeless guy? He's worth more than I am because
yeah.
Trump's liabilities were higher than his assets. So people need to understand that. And I will also add, I moved to Los Angeles from Chicago with $200 cash and no plan.
Yeah, this guy works hard.
What he's trying
I've
to say is,
times.
I started from the bottom, now I'm here.
That's right. That's what
yeah.
I'm hearing.
Tell him, Tim, you put the grind in. You came from the gutter.
Yeah, right.
You came from the trenches.
Icos.
New Jersey
says,
is definitely the gutter. I'll tell you that.
Icos 8 says, take out the dumb Federal Reserve part and you might have an interesting point, Ian.
Oh,
oh snap.
Wait, I want to think back to that.
So when
that
you were point. Talking about fighting the machine or whatever,
yeah.
reference the Federal Reserve for no reason.
Oh, defaulting on the interest to the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, Ian just came out straight swinging at the Federal Reserve.
Poverty today. Is yeah. a driving force of this, and I think the Federal Reserve is keeping us there with their interest rates.
Interesting.
With their All interest right. in general.
Dalamar says, yes, they are, Tim. Look what happened in Kenosha. The kid is now going through court for defending his community. Standing up gets you beaten or jailed. Two options. Let them loot. Oh, I'm not going to read that part.
Yeah.
Yeah, the options are very serious. Uh-oh, what's this? Kaiser C says, Ian, sun's getting real low, big guy. Come back to us, good sir. Another news, Will of the People was really good.
I didn't get it.
Gareth Green says, Tim and Ian are at it again. Sorry, I haven't posted for months. I was spending nearly as much on Super Chats as I made per month. You both sound like collectivists, but I'm more with Tim. Death by starvation is the default for all living things.
Yo, part of me really is with you on this. Like, let them suffer. I think about that a lot. Like, are humans a virus on this planet and we just got to let it eat itself out? Or should we be stand up for these ignorant fools and,
right,
and help them
Smith.
Survive?
Human like, beings are a disease. You know that? From
I Am a Gorilla?
You know, no. The Matrix?
Oh, yeah.
Agent
oh,
Smith?
Yeah.
Agent Smith. No, he said they're a
exactly.
parasite.
Is there something to virus. That? Or do we do disease. What's... Do we help these
it's
fools?
The smell.
Like, what do we do? Because if we give people unlimited food, are they just going to eat themselves into starvation? Like, are they going to just overpopulate and then wipe out the planet? Is starvation and death
Bro,
a natural survival mechanism
I
for our
asked,
species?
I asked Alex Jones.
What did he say?
Well, because I said, look at the Great Reset stuff. What if it's true that we are like yeast in you know, just eating the sugars and farting ourselves to death? Are we destined just to reach a point where we just eventually, you know, just fart ourselves to death? Maybe we do need some kind of reset to kind of stop humans from just eating until we explode. Alex was like, you know, he's like, it's an important question because I think about this all the time. You know, how do you balance the fact that we may be on a runaway train to destroy civilization as we know it with the same fact that you can't be an authoritarian wingnut manipulating, you know, people and stealing their rights? It's like, it's a tough question, man. The problem is I don't trust the people who tell me the world is ending and the oceans are rising and then they buy beachfront property. That's like look, man, if you really want to convince me of all these problems, like we got to stop overpopulation because global warming, then you go and buy beachfront property, kind of think you're lying to me about this.
And they take a private jet to Europe for a conference?
I'm not saying I think climate change isn't a real problem. I do think humans contribute to. I just think they want to hold us down and exploit the wealth and riches for themselves.
That was one of the best series that we did ever on the Daily Caller Vid Squad was Walls Across America. It was all these people who are criticizing the walls. We went to their houses and filmed how massive the walls were around their homes. We should do an update for Barry O and John Kerry on their beachfront property. The sea level is, what, 2 feet there?
We definitely got to reorganize the way people live and so we don't starve and like overpopulate, but can we do that with stupid or ignorant people lining
why are people like you're saying stupid
media,
or ignorant? That's like
they
scapegoatism,
they eat
right?
the wrong foods and now they're just like blind, you know, like zombies and the media that's intentionally like making them sheep for money to make them
but
like
can you
cogs.
Blame those people?
I can't blame them, but not the problem itself isn't necessarily the reason there's a problem, but you still have to eradicate the problem often.
Yeah, but exactly. But the approach of eradicating the problem rather than going to the root and digging out the roots.
But I think digging out the roots will kill the problem as well. So like what?
Yeah. So how do we dig out the roots?
Yeah, right.
Is my question.
So, yeah.
I don't know.
Rather than
you
just
can,
chop
like,
it
change,
off.
I don't know, man. This is the same thing I go over. Like I want to help these people because that's my empathy, but I'm also a realist. And if people are destroying themselves in the world with them, what's the value of keeping them?
Don't you think like that, you know, the ebbs and flows of the two-party system have a tendency to oscillate between like, you know, chaos and order, you know, the creative and the authoritarian. Like, so everybody in the 1960s was like, oh my God, these kids are going to be the death of us. And now those kids are boomers, right? And now those kids are freaking boomers. So how did the system course correct? Well, I think like,
responsibility kicked in.
Well, culture came around, and politics is downstream of culture, not to use that overwrought Breitbart quote, but it kind of is. And so Reagan was elected after Clint Eastwood became the, you know, the cool, strong alpha male, that archetype, that male archetype in the 1970s on the tail end of this. So I think what Donald Trump did was he kind of like just hijacked the entire political system. And before our culture was able to course correct back in that Clint Eastwood direction, you know, he basically hijacked it. And now everyone's like, oh my God, the whole thing's burning down because it's not a natural ebb and flow.
All right, well, let's read some more super chats.
Because of the media, the power
Robert,
of the media.
Yes, says, the world is going insane, but at least I have my Dogecoin like a good doggo. Yep. Also, I love the show. Use this super chat to buy the team some Doge.
Yeah.
I full disclosure, I bought a bunch of Doge.
Get your Doge.
I got
super chatters, take me to Vegas on some Doge.
I got, yeah. I'll
see the New York Times with some Doge.
Yeah.
I'll keep this kind of light, but because I don't like, I'm wary of the idea that, you know, a lot of people watching, you mention you're buying something. I'll say this. I've actually become fairly confident in Doge. That's all I can really say. So I bought some.
Do tell.
No, I'm not going to elaborate any further on that.
All right.
That's it.
Because I don't want to. I want to fully disclose I bought Doge. That's what I'm trying to do.
It's a cute dog.
Super
chatters. I think it's funny. And I think humor is confidence.
Send your boy Jorge to Vegas on some Doge.
No comment, but I will definitely do something if Doge goes up. And
no, I'm just saying this. I think the joke is showing people have confidence. And yes. Confidence.
That is true.
It's bringing people together.
Yeah.
So I like it. I bought some. All right. Let's see. Joshua Sanfilippo says, police are cool and all, but where are the local private militias and armed private citizens standing to defend life, liberty, and property? I live in Florida, and I know what I'd be doing if the riots were happening down here. Weren't there people doing that in Minnesota?
Yeah, I was going to say, well, in the Brooklyn Center, there was people that came out and defended businesses after the first night. So those folks did come out. They might not always get the media attention that they deserve, but they did come out. They did defend those businesses.
But like, that's factual. Rittenhouse was kind of like one of those people, right? Like a local militia, and look how he got raked.
It's not really militia, you know? People coming out, I guess you could argue, call it that. But
it doesn't have to be militia. It could even just be like, even small business owners just came out and defended their own little business.
That's what I call a militia.
All right, this one's for you, Ian, from a fan with some criticism.
Thank you.
Sarkaden says, Ian, you're awesome, man, and I love what you bring to the show, but I need you to work on knowing when you are derailing a conversation.
I think I do know some. Like today, I was like, I am derailing right now. Come with me, everyone.
He's like, but what about graphene?
Yeah,
can I make the Federal Reserve come in somewhere?
I talked about aliens at one point. That was great. The frontal lobe flow state. I want to go deeper.
Hey, this is a good super chat. Dr. DeLuna says YouTube is basically the Minneapolis of the video hosting platforms. It still makes money off those who choose to stay. When's the move to alt tech platform scheduled? Timcast.com has been up and running for only a few months now, and we are actively working on producing new content on that platform exclusively, as well as some YouTube stuff, because we're not looking at, in my opinion, the same thing as we have a riot about to erupt in our city and it's going to burn to the ground and you need to find a new place to live. We're looking at a massive cultural shift with what YouTube does and what is important for a business. So I'll tell you this. YouTube has proven itself an unsafe place to do business, 100%. People who have dedicated their lives to following YouTube, or I'm sorry, their careers to following YouTube's rules, find themselves banned overnight for no reason without understanding why, or they get strikes and then they're accused of things. You look at, say, Steven Crowder. He's followed the rules. He's gotten into it with YouTube. YouTube's tried taking him down. But what happens when you dedicate a decade to producing content for YouTube? YouTube says, here are the rules, say, you got it. And then eventually they change the rules and arbitrarily enforce taking you down. YouTube is an unsafe place to run a business. So we're setting up Timcast.com, and we've repeatedly talked about creating an open source subscription service. So the issue is right now we're trying to build something new. Ian,
it's very exciting.
Hit up Ian if you want to talk about this open source subscription service thing that we've been talking about.
You can message me on Twitter. We have an Element chat room where we've been hawking ideas. We actually have a meeting set up tomorrow around 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with a bunch of developers, and we're gonna talk about the code that we're gonna use to build this.
You know what though? You mentioning that is, I think it's really encouraging to see the success of news businesses putting things behind a paywall, because we created Daily Caller Patriots Only. Small plug right there. But while we were traveling around the country to cover these riots, we found that, okay, Facebook picks up on the fact, oh, these guys are in Portland. Okay, Portland riots, demonetized. Mm-hmm. So we can't monetize it on YouTube, can't monetize it on Facebook, but what we can do is say, hey, Patriots, we're going to show you guys what's really happening on the ground. If you subscribe to click. And actually, it's actually allowed us to fund not only that content, but content to show the rest of America what's going on.
And I want to just really quick add, Richie, is YouTube has already, and this has been proven, they're hitting independent news channels, or just news channels that they don't like, hitting them hard with algorithms, and you literally can't be seen. I mean, literally at our Daily Caller thing, we have over 700,000 subscribers, and I mean, they're just hitting us. I mean, our videos are so hidden. People always send me messages like, hey, we don't see anything on a Daily Caller. We don't see, we subscribe, we have to subscribe again. So it is a thing. It's already been proven. I know it started with Jordan Sharaton at the Status Quo. He's actually a progressive on the left, and a lot of progressives on the left, and I'll fight for them on the free speech thing. But a lot of news channels, independent media is getting hit by the algorithm. And a lot of these progressive left-wing channels, they covered the January 6th riots. They've sold footage to CNN and MSNBC, yet they'll get demonetized for the same footage.
I just want to clarify. I apologize, YouTube. I don't avow anything that Jorge just said. Love you guys.
And when you go to the Daily Caller's videos, hit the like button, because then you'll be way more likely to see it.
But you probably won't. I love you.
We got Dave Weisbrick. He says, Tim, bold of you to tell city people to stand up to rioters regardless of the consequences when you ran away to the countryside due to last year's riots. I think I repeatedly told people to leave Minneapolis over and over again, because I literally did. So you see, people need to understand, I'm not arbitrarily being like, people need to do something. No, I literally was like, I'm not going to live in a place that can't protect me. So I left, because I don't want to be supporting that. The people of Minneapolis could be doing that. They're not. They're staying there. The cops could be doing that. They're not. They're staying there. And then the system comes for them, and Kim Potter gets thrown under the bus. And I'm like, what did you think was going to happen? Running around with you know, there's all these rioters, and you think they're going, I said it over and over again. They're knocking on each door, going after people, and you're like, I'm the one house, they'll skip. And sure enough, they make it to your house. So I left. And then what happened, like a week after we leave, riots erupted in Philly.
Yeah.
They didn't cross the bridge that time.
We were there.
Come on, man.
We were there.
Tell him, Tim. You've been here since day one from the trenches.
And I'm like,
shout out to Eli. You got punched in the face.
Nowhere,
at that,
you to live your life.
Man, y'all coming at that Tim like he ain't been from the trenches.
Right, that's right. Seriously. Ben Walker says, meaning and purpose are a person's best defense against ideologies of any kind. Highly recommend Viktor Frankl's Man's Searching for Meaning. The concept of an existential vacuum helps with understanding the position many of these people are in.
Good super chat. Good super chat.
Wimplow says, remember when Bad Religion used to be punk?
Oh, good super chat. Yeah, I like that.
Sucks so
yeah.
Bad Religion.
Did you guys notice the shout out I did to Bad Religion earlier?
Yes.
No. You noticed? Yes. When I said maybe his dad's a lazy middle-class intellectual. Yes. Mom's on Valium, so ineffectual.
Thank you, I'm going to do what you tell me. Thank you, I'm going to do what you tell me.
No, F you better do what they tell you.
Yeah, that's way worse, you're right.
I don't know, I like the play one. I don't know.
Let's see, Eric Miller, if all cops are bad, then all BLM are rioters. I support neither, but if BLM, the organization, doesn't want violence, then they have the money to hire private security to control the marchers, but they don't. Did you hear the squad hired a bunch of private security?
Yes.
I love it. Capitalism.
Hey, shout out to Henry Rogers, Daily Caller. He actually put out an exclusive report with, like, going through all the expenses of the private security. So,
So we got a super chat from Sword and Scale. Many of you may be familiar. Sword and Scale is a really popular, I think, was it True Crime podcast?
Yeah. Yes, True Crime.
Oh, nice.
How bad do you think it will get this week? How many cities burned? How many businesses destroyed? How many lives lost? Thank you for everything you do, Tim. Cheers.
Cheers.
Well, quick prediction. Like I think I mentioned already in the show. I think no matter what happens, we're gonna see some chaos erupt. I don't see it reaching the magnitude that it did, but I think we're gonna see some things go down this week.
I don't even want to think about it.
I don't know, man. I kind of think it'll be worse. I don't know.
Think about that.
You know, what's up?
I don't even want to think about that. Word, honestly.
Rich is like, let me tune out.
Yeah.
Rusty Quarter says, hey, Tim and Ian, what are your favorite commanders for Magic the Gathering?
Urza. Sorry to interrupt.
I'm convinced you can use someone's favorite like a political compass. For instance, everyone who chooses Kalia is,
oh boy.
Is Hitler. Keep it up, by the way.
Spicy.
My favorite commander is not Urza.
I know.
Urza's OP.
I know.
I know, right, Urza.
It's so dumb.
It's the worst.
It's just too dumb.
It's too dumb.
I get it. You have fifth mana on turn
four. So busted. I had to take like five cards out of the deck because it was too powerful.
My favorite,
tell
Narset.
Me about it.
Yeah, you know all about it.
Totally.
Right?
Who?
Narset? Of course.
The OG Narset.
OG Narset.
That was the one you had when I met you.
The deck I built is pure global chaos and control.
That's really fun. That deck is fun to play against.
The games end up lasting 4 hours, and everyone's just confused as to what the rules are.
Tim goes, he just starts laughing, and he's like, he doesn't even care if he wins. He's just like throwing chaos on the board. He's like,
I lose. I basically lose.
Yeah.
So I'll use cards of like Grip of Chaos. All targets are random.
It's really funny.
And so all of a sudden, everyone's plans are just thrown to the wind, and I'm sitting there laughing. And then eventually, everyone's like, we have to stop Tim. The way I view it is kind of like, there's everyone's in quicksand trying to get to me to stop me from making the quicksand
in space. So it's like three dimensional. It's all around you.
Remember what we were talking about earlier about like everybody being LARPers. Like, that's what you guys are.
Ring a bell.
But we don't really play all that much anymore, to be honest. We do.
Not lately, but I would like to.
We did recently have an idea for a board game. Maybe it exists, but the idea is that it's the game would be an orbital space station doing experiments with antimatter explodes, or the reactor detonates, creating and then freezing, creating a rift where there's two dimensions like overlaid on each other, and they can, you can sort of see both.
That's fun.
And so the board game would actually be three dimensional with magnets, where each character, you know, like Clue, there's like, you know, Mr. Plum or whatever, mm-hmm. Professor Plum. There would actually be two John Smiths, two Jane Does, but there's like Universe A and Universe B. And then certain universes have certain components. So, like, that was kind of a general idea we had for a board game we wanted to make.
But they can't come into contact because they'll annihilate each other, like the antiparticle. So
yeah, two people, two of the same characters can't be in the same place at the same time. It's just, you know, but then like an electrical conduit will be shifted into Universe A, and then to open a door, Universe A has to hit the switch to open the door in Universe B. So it would be a game where there would be like components that move around.
So basically, like what we were talking about, you guys being LARPing nerds earlier,
definitely LARPing LARPier. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it gets crazier. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Pretty much, yeah. No,
let's see. Lord of Nosgoth says, Tim, the problem in this country is folks like your buddy Ian.
Ooh, those are fighting words. Yeah.
They are all too happy to lose themselves in a web of moral relativism and conspiracy.
Hmm. I'm not happy about it, but it's the philosophy is dangerous, dark, and must be done.
Dingus Malingus says, Tim, I live in Minneapolis. Our mayoral and city council election is coming November. Both the state AG and Hennepin County attorney elections were in 18 and up again in 22. Voters may have also thought Orange Man bad made people freak out more. You had a president who was like, the riots have to stop. And you had a president who was like, my staff, come on, man, they're donating to this. And Kamala Harris was like, give me money to get the rioters out. And people were like, I'm going to vote for the lady who wants the rioters to be out of jail. Sorry, man. I don't know what to tell you. But I hear you on the mayoral stuff. Yeah, for sure. We'll see. We'll, you know.
Dude, in the Minneapolis AG, Keith Ellison's very left wing. He's like an Antifa sympathizer.
Oh, Keith Ellison? No.
Yeah. So, if you voted Keith Ellison in, you got to deal with that because he's an Antifa sympathizer. So.
All right. Joe Sullivan says, Floyd case is a reasonable doubt versus doubt issue. Just because there is doubt doesn't necessarily mean it's reasonable. Let's face the truth. They will come for Chauvin in the jails or the street. Verdict is irrelevant for him, just like Floyd.
You ain't wrong, brother.
I don't think anyone's arguing with that.
I don't think you're wrong, brother.
Yeah, man.
These Super Chats is really fire tonight.
Yeah.
Yep.
These guys is on point. Yeah.
Man. Yeah.
Dan, Danine S. Not asking for myself, but at some point would you consider internships? You want people who already know how to do stuff, but they have to learn somewhere. Also, I'd rather future journalists learn from you than from the current college system. We are already considering internships. Yeah. The issue
that's
is great.
That's dope.
Yeah, but I won't take interns that actually do core functions. I'm not about that. I think anybody who's going to be doing kind of like a menial task is going to be getting paid.
Right.
You know.
All right. If you're an intern and you don't want to do a menial task and not get paid for it, richie@dailycaller.com. Email me.
So
I will give you, you'll learn everything, but you will not, you'll get a sandwich a week.
Oh, nice. So I'm thinking.
And school credit.
We might have a couple interns whose job is to literally just hang out and like a literal internship. Like actually hang out, learn, see how the business operates. Internships are typically like minimum wage jobs where they just don't pay you. They're like, we want you to do stuff and we're not going to pay you. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Now we can have some interns. You got to skate. You got to play music. You got
to
hang out.
Internship was a little bit different. They just
my internship is way worse. Yeah. That's correct about what the internship entails.
My socks cleaned.
But I will say this though, for those who are looking for internships or they might be in high school or college and are looking into journalism, I actually watched Tim Pool back in Vice. That's actually when I was in high school, I watched Tim Pool back in Vice. I actually wouldn't even be on the front lines.
And then you DM'd me, awesome. And I gave you a job for one sandwich a week. You just have to get tear gassed every week.
I need two tacos, carne asada, per week. Two tacos.
I don't know if you're allowed to do that, but I guess you are because you're Mexican, you right?
If I feel no right, I don't get paid.
Oh <my God.
laughs> Are we allowed to laugh at that?
Yes, we are.
Yes.
No, we all have to be stone-faced and only you can laugh.
Only Jorge can laugh at it.
No comment.
Never summer 160 said, here's $5, get Ian a Snickers. Matt Volker says, that's so called being hungry. Ian, somebody get this man a Snickers.
I never get more mad than when I'm fat.
Snickers are $5 now.
Ian, you were lit tonight,
dude,
bro.
When I go fasting, I'm just talking about punk. We need to bring punk rock to the main. We need to confront.
Ian just had Federal Reserve on his mind and was like, I'm going to use it.
Guys, I got to read this. Okay. Jay Mill says, the guest with the Point Break shirt on looks like an attempt to create an intelligent version of Matthew McConaughey's character from Dazed and Confused.
Yes.
All right, all right, all right.
Yes.
That is Richie.
These super chats are fucking
great. You got a joint? Be a lot cooler if you did.
What have you done?
You were right.
All right. Justin says, Tim and Ian, any interest in a maker community as part of Timcast? Allow makers to collab on projects with like-minded people. Oh, no echo chamber. I do woodworking, coding, and I'm a cloud engineer. I want community to make things with y'all. Should we build a building for a hackerspace?
Yeah, we do need a building off-site. That's what we would need. And then you have to be part of the vlog.
We could expand the venue, the grind bar.
I want another property.
Just grind like a giant makerspace that people can commute to and from.
Yeah, maybe we get a commercial building for
Or build R&D. Something. We need a piece of property.
You're going to be like Tony Stark. You just start making.
Maybe.
You can go underground.
Kind of like in a garage. There's a lot more people of a lot more money who are doing fun stuff like jetpacks. So
you could be like the Tony Stark of Airsoft.
It's really about funding.
That was all Luke's thing. I think Luke was the one who wanted to play Airsoft.
We have a lot of people that want to come and a lot of potential space to get, but we need the funding. I mean, so we don't. I mean, it would
That's
help.
Not the issue.
So sign up at timcast.com.
You know what
and
help?
Yes. Yeah. But
graphene,
funding isn't the issue is because I'm not going to let investors come in and derail anything.
No, direct funding to timcast.com is the best thing you can do help fund the organization grassroots. And we should,
so
we should
can
do
buy
a makerspace.
$4 million homes.
Like we can build graphene.
Bro, we got a production facility. We're going to be hiring news editors and writers. I've been saying over and over again, I'm not going to be buying infinity pools or doing dumb things. Like, we're going to be making content, building culture, and funding TV shows and movies and trying to, like, you look at this, like, woke movie system and comics and games. Like, no, we're just going to fund things we like. Here's what I say. You want to make a woke movie? By all means. I got no beef. You make a product. You do your thing. I don't like it. I'm not going to buy it. Hey, I know. I'll make my own movie that I do like. And then if people like that, they can buy it. So I'll tell you this. If I had a choice, like people sign up for TimCast.com and money comes in, if I had a choice between buying an infinity pool or buying the labor that creates awesome articles, I would rather give someone a job.
And by the way, that the cost for that labor in order to produce that video or that article is cheaper now than it ever has been previously in human history. I mean, this is like the printing press 2.0. Like, people don't realize, oh, our speech is getting censored, all this stuff. It's still the internet.
Right.
You can still create your own platform. Like,
I would rather hire someone to go report on the ground like you guys do than own an infinity pool or something like that.
Hell yeah.
Because I'll tell you this. You're at a party, you know, everyone's drinking, everyone's bragging. What's better? Look at my pool, or look at this award-winning journalism that's changing the world.
I gotta, please, you guys.
No, we don't get no awards. Let me tell you about that.
You know what I mean? You know,
we ain't getting no awards.
Please build something you believe
convince
in.
Convince Tim to get the pool, please, you guys. Start super chatting him. Tell him to get a pool.
Ian's been saying we need a hot tub.
I think if we can soak in the water, it will make us more creative and it will give us exercise.
I like you.
Healthy brain. And I want to point out, Richie brought up graphene.
I did.
And he's right about that.
Yeah. I like the way Ian thinks.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, let's see.
I want to go swimming in the pool in Infinity Pool.
Yes.
I want to go swimming. I want to go swimming in Tim Pool's Infinity Pool.
Tim's pool.
But I have to clean it first.
Oh, all right, well, I want to participate, but I don't want to get canceled.
Just a couple more super chats. Kathy Mack says, how are we to survive as a country with no family values, sense of community, or a higher power, like after death? We are now a country that only values and encourages self-interest. We may be doomed by this path. I agree.
This is what I'm trying to talk about.
That's true.
Kathy, I'm trying.
It's not even about necessarily, in my opinion, a belief in a higher power. It's a belief in each other. Do we care about our community to where when we hear that China is attacking us, we need to defend ourselves? No. The people in this country are split into political sectarianism.
Part of what bothered me about Trump, and I don't hate him, but is that he tended to talk about being the best. And being the one, like, I'm the best. And I find that a team and supporting your friends is, like, so key. If you can be part of a community where the people around you become better and stronger.
I don't think that's the problem, though.
I feel like Trump was actually more like, we are the best. Like, this country is the best. We're the alphas.
I don't know. I think the problem is it's, like, digital versus reality, which is, like, the younger you are right now, the more important your digital identity is, right? Like, as compared to your actual identity. So whether or not you're a team player, or you're me, or you're awesome here, it's a matter of whether or not you're awesome. Like, are you awesome in real life, IRL, or are you awesome on the internet? And like, what matters more now is that you're awesome on the internet. So it's like, I don't know. Yeah. I coach these kids and they're all trying to like stay on their phones and like maintain all these digital relationships. And we're sitting at the table. I'm like, dude, you're with all the hockey boys. Like, why aren't we chilling right now? Why is everybody Snapchatting a corner of one of their eyes to six different girls?
You coach hockey? Fun. You coach hockey?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, the hockey boys.
Yeah, so stuff like
Shout
that.
Out to the hockey boys. G-Town Puck.
All right, let's see.
That's awesome.
Mac is Mojo. Tim, you need to buy an infinity pool hot tub for the chickens. Maybe we wrong. Do build yes. a, I think.
Oh, a mini.
A little think, tiny.
Tim, they would love that.
Tim, I think he means chickens, but for a code word for something else. But
oh, no, for us.
I don't think.
That's what he meant.
I don't think the chickens would like the hot tub. So they're babies and they're learning how to do dirt baths and it's the funniest thing ever because they don't know what they're doing and they're trying. You know, you know what dirt bath is? The chickens dig little dirt holes and then they start throwing dirt over themselves and, you know, wiggle around. But they're like they're still really young, so they're doing it wrong, and they're just like laying and like flopping around. Like
I thought a dirt bath is like when Sal, you know, puts a dirt in the back.
A dirt nap.
I used to think the infinity pool was a pool with a waterfall that constantly went for infinity that never stopped. But then I looked it up and I saw it was when it goes off to the horizon and you can't tell where it ends.
Could we get Ian an infinity dirt bath instead of his?
Yeah, I will. It's just a infinity dirt bath for food.
50-gallon bin full of dirt.
There you go, you communist. Right, you get a dirt bath.
All right, well, last one. We got Sword and Scale. He says, be careful, Tim. We all know what happened to every headquarters Tony Stark ever made. Investing in America right now is dangerous. Maybe just buy more Doge. Now, I'm investing in fun stuff that's inspirational. I want people to... you know, feel like they can accomplish things and judge people on the content of their character, not the color of their skin. You know what I mean?
What happened at Tony Stark's headquarters?
They all blow up.
Like supervillains?
Well, like they blow up. Yeah, bad guys blow them up.
No, but that's important. Like what you're building is actually, it's completely different from like any other kind of commodity that you're providing, which is like, it's the proof is only in the pudding of like what you put out on the internet in video, you know, in print. It's not like quantifiable. Like,
you know,
I built this building.
You know,
it's
weird.
But it's
to me?
Important.
You know what's weird to me is there's so many people who are very rich off of doing commentary, and they just like their accomplishment is the fact that they're rich.
Yeah, they just have their show.
And I'm like, why don't you guys, you're millionaires, you know, like hire a bunch of people to make more of this? They don't.
Plus, it's so the dollar per minute of video now is so cheap that the network that you can build with just a little something that even a semblance of an attempt to be independent. Yeah. Now sets you aside from the rest of
I
it.
Think the reason they don't is because it's challenging to build a team. It comes you really
yeah quality control
and personalities and managing personalities.
That's for damn sure.
It requires a lot of listening.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, bro.
Well, that being said, a lot of listening is required over at timcast.com because an exclusive segment is coming up for our members only in just a little bit. So make sure you go to timcast.com, become a member, smash the like button on this video, subscribe. Thank you all so much for helping us break a million this past week. It's been fantastic. This show is live Monday through Friday at 8 p.m., so we're, of course, going to be back tomorrow. You can follow me on all social media platforms at TimCast. And, seriously, thank you guys. It's been an amazing ride. My other YouTube channels are youtube.com/TimCast and youtube.com/TimCastNews. And the vlog is up. I got to make the channel, I guess. But there's a video, and you can see what the house looks like. We kind of give a tour of everything. And that is in the community tab of this. There's a link to it. It's called Cast Castle. We may change the name. I don't know. But you guys, Riot Squad, you want to shout anything out?
Richard?
I just want to give a shout out to the Daily Caller Vid Squad, who everybody's working hard. And my social at Richard McGinnis. Two eyes and two S's on McGinnis. That's how the Irish spell it when they're good and drunk off whiskey.
My Instagram. No, I'm just kidding.
Instagram is Jorge Ventura TV. We have all updates, long form content for live updates on like on the ground, real time Ventura report. Just want to shout out all the hardworking journalists out there covering the civil unrest, the Daily Caller Vid Squad, but also a big shout out to Tim Poo because it's a big thing when journalists like us who are on the ground. Who are working hard to get this info out. It's great when Tim uses his platform to give
Agreed.
Us a platform to get this information out to more people. I think that doesn't happen enough in journalism. So shout out to Mr. Tim Poole.
100%. That's the point of the new media, baby.
Yeah.
To the moon. Yeah. Doge new media to the moon.
Thursday incoming. Yo, you can follow me at Ian Crossland. I am Ian Crossland at iancrossland.net. And I love you guys, Tim, Richie, Jorge, Lydia. You guys so rock. And you... chilling right there listening right now. Thank you. I love it. I love the criticism and everything involved. It's hot.
Please subscribe to my YouTube channel.
Me love.
All right, don't eat taco.
Okay. All right, thank Jorge. You. Enough accents. I was just going to say I really appreciate what we're doing here. I'm so excited that we broke a million. That was something that I wanted for Christmas. We were a little bit late. I'm just kidding. I'm very, very happy that we reached the point that we have a million subscribers. I'm stoked for what we're doing here. And I am Sour Patch Lids on Twitter. Please join me in my quest to have more followers than Sour Patch Kids on Twitter.
We will see all of you over at timcast.com in about 45 minutes or so. Thanks for hanging out, and we will see you all there.
Bye, guys.
Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.